Those of you who were paying close attention and taking copious notes noticed that our theme started out at a low volume and then eventually
surged.
Mm-hmm. And as I was speaking over it, as I am wont to do, and I wanted to do, and I usually lower the volume, and the volume did not go down.
Hmm.
And I was manipulating things from the, now, this is technical jargon that I'm sure you all will understand, from the hotkey position on the board, and it nothing made a difference, Bob. Is there a...
Bob's looking away. He's like, I want no part of this.
You didn't have it up, Julian, did you?
Am I usually supposed to have it up?
No.
Because I haven't always had it up, and it's worked fine from his end.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you both have it up, even if he controls it, it doesn't control it because one, it stays wherever you have it. So if you didn't have it up,
and you did,
then there's something wrong.
So someone had it up.
Yeah. I had nothing to do with it.
That's true.
Me neither. I'm like, okay.
I'm far away. My hands are nowhere near that board.
But anybody else had it up?
I'm warning you people. It started when we pulled in the garage tonight, and the garage was blocked by cars that couldn't get into the garage. And then we realized there were cars that couldn't get out of the garage.
Yeah. And we literally had to drive around the guy who was trying to back into us to get into the garage. And then, Julian, you came in shortly after we did.
And he's just blocking the whole way. He's just sitting in the middle between the
maybe it's
out.
Maybe he's got it up.
Maybe he does. You know what? Let's do some tests. I'm going to do a quick test here. Let's see if this thing works.
All right.
What?
Okay.
You know what? That's two strikes against you.
But wait, just to test.
Do it again?
I'm going to try it. And
let Steve try it.
I'm going to try it and see if I can lower the volume on it.
Okay.
Leave us see what happens.
Again, this is not me. Please, understand, this is not me. I've got no control over this.
Oh, that's interesting. I've got the volume all the way up. Ain't nothing happening.
So you got no control either.
So what
is... Didn't you just say off the air, we're going to be getting a new board?
Yeah.
It's about time, maybe.
About time.
Yes.
Can it be here by 9:30?
Did you put the quarter in?
Where do we kick it?
Yeah.
Isn't that what you do? You kick it.
So basically, this is looking like no matter what I do, it's nothing that I do from here is going to make any sounds like it usually does.
Hmm. All right, now I'm looking.
But then after... Did you hit the?
That's Bob.
Did you hit the intro after I did? Because somehow the intro started playing.
This is weird.
Testing. 1, 2.
And now we have Dan over on the other side. So we have
Dan Long on one side.
We have a surfeit of people checking out the
Bob over your shoulder.
What do you think, Bob?
Everything
right. Looks fine.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to. Dan's over there.
Right.
Bob's here. I'm going to hit the Diane Cannon laugh with my hotkey up.
Up, yeah.
Oh. No.
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 Cannot control the volume.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to blame it on Diane Cannon. I think Diane has it up.
Can I have the car keys? I got to run and get something out of the car.
None of this makes any sense.
I know.
Julian, anything from your side of the...
I think we're realizing that you, for some reason, don't have control over that. You can click it, but you can't do
And I always want to do the...
For those listening, I'm doing a volume control gesture.
Okay, now I'm going to control the volume on my microphone.
Oh, you did.
Okay, so that works. Okay, so we're... I know this is riveting radio.
It is. Oh, it's a great way to start the show, too. Ooh,
yeah.
Have the Sox won yet?
No. Oh, now they're behind 5-2.
Oh, boo.
No.
See, this is just a sucky night. I'm sorry.
Well, at least it's not 20 or
Well, that's
10.
True. That's a good point, yes.
It can only go up from here.
Everything is up. Everyone's up but us.
And as Spike Odell said for years, you don't get this kind of radio up and down the dial.
No, you don't.
And there are reasons for that. For those of you that are keeping score, the problem is we need to have it set on wide orbit control room 1 hot. So write that down in your scorebooks. Mm-hmm. Wide orbit, control room one, hot.
Is that why I'm fanning myself? Because it was on hot?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
No, actually,
it was on backup.
It was on backup,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm blaming it on Bob Surratt.
There is a BS button on there, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. Yeah. So that's
oh, that's right. It's Bob Surratt. It's not the other word. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's Labor Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about Labor Day weekend is we get to talk about our first job. So, the chortling man in the newsroom. Your first job.
First paying job would be at McDonald's.
Really?
Yeah, on Lincoln Avenue.
How long did you last?
I was there for about 2 or 3 years.
Really?
Yeah, I liked out through high school.
Okay, because a couple of weeks ago on our drive into work, I took a picture of the only McDonald's I worked at, and I was there a matter of days because I couldn't stand the fact that my hair smelled like grease.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. I'd be walking home, and I was like, no, there are other jobs I can take. So I went to Davidson's Bakery, and I smelled like sugar, which was much better.
Much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at 15, it was so much better to smell like sugar than grease.
I liked the fast pace of it. Yeah. I liked McDonald's. I was a teenager.
Sure,
of course.
And your friends came in, so they saw you.
Yes, they did, and they kind of laughed because I was wearing the McDonald's uniform, but, mm-hmm. you know, the McDonald's
and
hat.
And you slipped them some extra fries?
I did, some hamburgers sometimes. I was, a teenager. And,
sure.
Challenging things.
Lincoln Avenue where? What was the cross street?
That was Lincoln, Lawrence, and Western.
Oh, know it well. Sure.
They just opened that McDonald's. Mm-hmm. I was like on the first crew.
That's funny because the McDonald's I worked at in Andersonville had just opened.
Hmm.
And the whole neighborhood was like, whoa, we've made it. We've got a McDonald's.
That was it. It was a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah,
very it was before
big.
They were everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we made, $1.85 an hour?
I think so.
Something like that. Yes. Well, my favorite job, speaking of the North Side, Weiss Hospital. McDonald's came after I spent some time taking the remote control out of the hands of sick people in the hospital.
Because, it prepared you for your work in radio.
That's right. Because at that time, if you wanted a television in your room at Weiss Hospital, they would call the girl, and that was me, and I would go up to a storage room, and I would get a big television that was on a rolling cart. I'd get on a freight elevator, and I'd bring it down to your room, but I wouldn't plug it in until you gave me the dollar. And then I would give you the remote control. But then if you kept it a couple of days, and I keep coming back in for the money, they go, I'll pay you tomorrow, Finally, I'd have to rip that remote control out of your hand, as you were saying, but the Price is Right is on. Can I just? Nope. You didn't pay me. Got to take it. It was tough. It was really hard. They're sick people, and you're prying the remote control out of their sweaty hands. That was hard work.
As I said, prepared you for
yes,
radio.
Yes, that's right. Julian, your first job.
Well, luckily, I didn't have to deal with sweaty hands. I just dealt with sweaty clothes.
Oh?
I worked at an Urban Outfitters at Woodfield Mall.
Really?
For a total of 3 days.
Uh-oh. Why?
I got fired because I called them on a Sunday saying, hey, it's Sunday, 8 a.m, can I get my schedule? And they said, oh, you were supposed to be here an hour ago. And I say, what? How does that
on
work?
On a Sunday?
On a Sunday.
Huh.
I don't know why I've always did that. I don't know why I did it. On a Sunday.
You became a soprano.
Sunday.
So you walked, and then you ended up as a barista?
Actually, my next job after that, I worked at a different mall where I was going around helping these vendors, artists, little entrepreneurs selling their goodies, custom stuff, and I would set up these art walls.
Kiosks.
With kiosks. And they could
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. I got paid maybe $5 an hour. It was great.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
but of course, you're so much younger than us. We were $1.95 an hour back in the day.
And Bob, happy to get it.
Your first job.
Loading trucks.
Oh, that's hard work.
With the Sun-Times and Tribune.
Really?
Oh, cool.
The trucks would come in, I'd have to unload them, then pull in the vans, load them up.
Oh.
So yeah, that was my first gig.
Did you smell like a printer's ink?
No, but your hands get...
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's true.
So were you just lifting big bundles of papers into
and
the
just
trucks?
Throwing them?
Yep. That was exciting.
And you were a teenager doing that?
Yes.
Was the money decent? No.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. Just, we look back on that and go, no, there was no such thing as decent money then.
No, yeah.
Because I was supposed to live on tips when I was doing the television thing. You know, if you take a remote control out of a sick person's hand, they ain't going to give you a tip.
I was gonna say, what's the tip out of that?
Right. Yep. No. Young lady, come back. Let me give you a five. No, not going to happen. Now, Steve, you had a bizarre job, too.
Well, okay. So my first job was with the band.
Right.
But I assume you mean my first non-with a band job?
Yes, your unusual job.
Well, my most unusual was a vibration measurement engineer taking seismograph readings of dynamite blasts.
Wow.
As the Army Corps of Engineers was widening the Little Calumet River, and we were basically...
Now, you were a teenager.
Yeah. Basically, we were an insurance for the Army Corps of Engineers. Why? Because they're doing this blasting, they're deepening the Little Calumet River, and there are several steel mills that are all over the place. I would literally have to set up on a ledge looking over the Calumet River to make sure that the blast didn't generate enough movement to knock down a wall in Republic Steel or something like that. So it was, okay, here's how big the blast was. Yes, this could have done it. No, it couldn't have done it.
Okay.
And working in concert with the Army Corps of Engineers, and they would say, okay, we're setting the blast off at 9:05. 9:02, the blast would go off.
They hate kids. That's why they've got us out here on a ledge. That would be scary.
You're like a canary in a coal mine.
That's right.
Well, in the cage.
And one of the scariest moments was, so I'm on this ledge, and it's about at most about a, what am I holding up, about a 4 foot, if that, wide ledge.
3'3".
Yeah.
And on one side, looking down, there's the river.
The river.
Behind me, some train tracks.
Oh.
I'm setting up this seismograph, and didn't hear, because it was very slow and very quiet, there was a train that came right behind me. And all of a sudden, I go to stand up, and I go, oops, I can't stand up because this train is very slowly moving. And so I had to wait till the train went by, and then...
And that's why you're here today.
That's right.
Wow. All right. Text us, 312-981-7200. We'll take a break and be right back here on WGN.
There goes another summer, back to school again. No more sloppy clothes, driving shows, sleeping till after 10. There goes summer, back to school again. Goodbye summer vacation, driving's and staying out late. Now we're doing our best to pass our test, so we can graduate. There goes summer, back to school again. I'll spend Friday night at my girl's house, trying to steady some, but with the hugging and the dancing and the smooching and romancing, ain't much homework getting done. Goodbye summer vacation, driving's and staying out late. Now we're doing our best to pass our tests, so we can graduate. There goes summer, back to school again.
Steve King and Johnny Pugman at WGN Radio. So we're talking about first jobs. That was one of my first jobs. I think I was about, recorded that in roughly 62-ish. So I would have been
18.
18, something like that. There goes another summer was that Cha-Cha Records? I think so. Owned by a local guy, Donald DeLucia.
A record that you could sell for $100 on eBay.
Oh, is that what the price is now?
That's what the price is, yes. And it's not in good shape. And it doesn't have a sleeve. How many do we have at home? Come on. We could unload a few.
I think we've got a couple of those.
Okay.
That never ceases to amaze me. Sometimes we haven't done it in a long time, but we'll occasionally check on eBay and see what some of my old records are going. The one that sells for the most is the one that is still being reissued on CDs over in Europe. Satan Is Her Name, which is something I recorded in... actually, that would have been around 62 also for Mercury Records.
Was the highest price 500?
Something like
in
that.
In Ireland?
Yeah.
And the guy was giddy? And then when you wrote to him and thanked him for buying it? Well,
there was a guy who did a video. He made the video using some of the clips from Faster, Pussycat, Kill Kill.
Mm-hmm.
And it tied in with
well, that was a Polish kid, yeah,
yeah.
Who, when you wrote to him to tell him how impressed you were with the video that he'd put together, he said, "That's it, I can die. I feel like Elvis has just contacted me." I was like, "Really? Okay." But he had a garage band and did a great job of putting together the video, which is readily available, folks. You can see it out there.
Yeah. Just do a search for Satan Is Her Name.
Yeah. So you then decided that you would be a vibrations engineer.
I didn't decide. It was just that I needed something. At that point, the gigs weren't as plentiful as I wanted them to be. So I
were
was
you
a vibration
wearing
measurement engineer for a while.
Your performance clothes to go out and measure vibrations, like your Beetle boots and...
No, but I did wear the Beetle boots when I worked for a company called Radio Surgeons when I was walking around... peaked roofs in installing television antennas.
It had nothing to do with radio.
Had nothing to do. Well, the radio part was it was an electronic thing. You needed an antenna. Put the antenna on the on the roof.
Let's
on
find
the
a 16-year-old kid who will climb up there foolishly.
And nobody told me how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there I was one day walking around this peaked roof with my Beetle boots, and I thought, you know, I don't think I want to do this for a long time.
There's another kind of radio I could aim for, but this ain't it.
Yep.
No. Yeah, I just love the fact that we're getting texts from people that say, well, I was 14 years old, and when I grew up, I realized that what they made me do was all of the bad jobs that the adults at the at the factory didn't want to do. It was that simple. We had a couple of people that worked as lifeguards, and one guy said, to this day, he's never been happier than he was as a lifeguard. And that was a long, long time ago. Let's see. I worked at, this listener worked at Weiss Hospital and Hugh Hefner's doctor office. Hugh Hefner's doctor office in Weiss Hospital. Tell me more, please.
Here's somebody, 630 area code, my first job, carpet installer.
That's hard.
Making $400 a week at age 13. Actually, at 13, making $400 a week.
Yeah,
that's
a lot of money.
That was pretty decent.
Yeah, because I think our pay was probably in the double digits. You know, you got $73. Yay! You can go to town with that.
847 area code. Very good question. After Monday, can Steve still wear his summer black clothes? No, actually, after Monday, I segue to my fall black.
Your autumn black, yes. And I hate the fact that Labor Day is so early because this weekend I have to pack up the whites. It's a rule. And, you know, back...
Lightning is going to strike you?
No, people will talk. That's what my mother would say. Okay. People will talk, girl. Okay. Put those away. You have Labor Day. That's your cutoff. I don't care if it's the 1st or if it's the 7th. You don't do it after Labor Day.
Okay, then I won't wear white after Labor Day.
No, don't. But you actually do have autumn black and you have fall black.
Yeah. And your point is?
You have been wearing your summer black.
Yeah.
Well, a listener said that she went to college with a guy that worked at Long John Silver's and he had to wear like a pirate shirt. And every time he walked into the dorm, he reeked about peanut oil. See, that's what I'm talking about. If you had long hair back in the day and you worked at McDonald's, you reeked, and it wasn't good. It wasn't attractive.
Reeking is never,
never
a good,
good
thing.
No, it's not quite
doesn't
as...
Doesn't matter what the context is.
If you smell like a glazed donut and your skin is sugar-coated, now we're talking. That's good. You get on the L, and everybody on the L starts sniffing, and you're like, it's me. If you're cute and you're single, it's me. If you're a weirdo, I don't know who smells like that. I have no idea. So here's Ken tells us his first job was a porter at Breedeman Toyota in Park Ridge. He said, I didn't know how to drive stick shift, but I lied during the interview and I told them that I did. First day at work, they wanted me to move the cars into the showroom. Ooh, this doesn't sound good.
Mm-mm.
And I remember my dad telling me, do not pop the clutch. And I did. And I drove through the wall. On the other side was the men's room. And I knocked the urinal off the wall. And water was everywhere. And I thought I was going to get fired. But I worked there for 4 years, all through high school.
Wow.
That is
some very tolerant bosses.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But that reminds me of a job experience, again, with radio surgeons.
Yes.
And they told me one day, well, we've got this new shipment that just came in. It's at a place around the stockyards.
Oh, yeah.
Can you go and get it? And I said, no, okay, fine. They said, okay, here's the keys. Toss me the keys. I get to the truck, stick shift.
Mm-hmm.
I had no clue how to drive stick shift. I kind of taught myself, and I wound up driving from roughly 79th in South Chicago to the stockyards, mostly in second gear because it was
chugging
the easiest
along.
One. Yeah. And I
but
I
you
made
finally,
it.
Finally, you figured it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. You weren't about to say to them, no, I'm sorry, nope. I don't know how to, no, not gonna fess up to that.
As I recall, the interesting thing was figuring out how to get it into reverse, because when I got to the stockyards, I had to back up to this dock where they would load a bunch of stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an interesting experience. Again, as we've told you, a lot of people these days are finding that stick shift means your car is theft proof.
Mm-hmm.
Too many people don't know how to drive stick
shift. That's right. It's a lot like writing a letter in longhand in cursive.
Yep.
It could be like writing in Morse code for some people. They look at it and go, I don't know what this says. I don't know that. So as I've said many times on the show, if you know how to write and read cursive, that's a superpower nowadays. Hang on to it. And if your kids aren't learning it, you should take some time to teach them, because it
will
come in
handy. That will get you into the CIA if you can write cursive.
It will come in handy someday. Terry from Des Plaines says, I worked at Lauter's in Randhurst. It was a clothing store.
I remember that.
Yeah. I kind of remember. I loved Randhurst back in the day. And Terry said, I matched ties and shirts for their new suits for Carl Grayson and Lloyd Pettit.
Oh, that's funny.
That's a cool gig, too.
Back in the days when they both worked for Channel 9.
And they were wearing polyester suits that were rather flamboyant, so they had to have a shirt and a tie to match. Oh, golly. Let's see here. This listener said, when my daughter was in college, she came home for the summer and worked in a factory that made barbecue sauce. She worked the night shift and at 1 a.m. was showering. She had to wash her hair. It smelled so bad. She wore the same old T-shirt and jeans to work the whole summer because every day she washed them, the smell never came out. She threw them in the garbage her last day. They paid the college kids well, so she was very happy. Well, I remember working as a cleaning woman, and that was the best job. I could have worked in the office for a buck less than being a cleaning woman in the factory.
Mm-hmm.
I chose to be a cleaning woman because it was me and a crew of wonderful Polish women who spoke very little English and a bunch of young guys that could speak English. So I was like, okay, throw me in that briar patch. I'm cool with that.
And a 40-hour week, a buck an hour, makes a difference.
Yes, it sure does. Because the reason you made more than the office did, too, is because it was a night shift job.
Yeah.
It was 3 to 11 or 5. Anyway, it was in the evening when the factory was not as busy. But it was a good gig. Very good. But you're thinking of driving. My first job in radio in Aurora, I didn't know how to drive, so I got the job on a Monday. I practiced on a Tuesday. I got my license on a Wednesday, and I drove out to Aurora from the north side of Chicago on Thursday and started my job. And I figured as I was driving out there on the East-West Tollway, if I can do this, I can do radio.
Yeah.
This is the scariest thing in my day, in my world right now.
And then you wound up driving two radio stations.
Yes, right. Okay, here's a listener who worked in the dish room in my dorm dining service my freshman year in college. I'd get sweaty and smell like the dish room. I often worked breakfast and didn't have time to shower before I went to class. And they're still talking about you, too. Okay, a bunch of these. If we didn't get to your text now, we've got time later on tonight. Here's one that worked at Nikki Chevrolet. Remember Nikki Chevrolet?
Sure.
Worked at Nikki Chevrolet as a new car...
The sign of the backward K.
Oh, very
wasn't,
good.
Wasn't that their slogan?
Yes. You don't know where your socks are, but you remember that.
Because they had N-I, and one K was backward, and one K was frontward.
That's right.
I remember the important stuff.
708 area code said, I worked at Nikki Chevrolet as a new car prep mechanic. $2 an hour, 6 days a week. Whoa. Here, 847, my first job was at a bar called Clancy's Pub and Grub on Lincoln and Cullum. I think I remember Clancy's. It was by the Jewels, and that's the Jewels. I was a busboy. This is Chris from Buffalo Grove. I graduated from St. Matthias across from the McDonald's. Nice to hear from you, Chris, in Buffalo Grove.
615, I first learned with the three on the tree, David in Nashville.
Oh, that's what it used to be called, three on the tree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's when, rather than having the stick shift on the floor console, mm-hmm. you had it right on the steering wheel.
Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? We have run out of time in this hour. I came in here planning to talk about the big news today about wearing your socks to bed. So listen, folks, you need to stick around tonight.
Well, there's still time.
Yeah. I know. Coming up later tonight, we'll talk about the dangers of wearing your socks to bed. So don't go to bed.
Oh, you know what we haven't done?
Yes.
We haven't explained some of the cast of characters joining us tonight. A little later, a guy that we talked to, was it about a year ago?
It was last June, a year ago June, when he said, do you think you could help me out? I've got a Kickstarter campaign going to get this project off the ground.
His name is John Dudley. He is the writer for Big Shoulders, which is a terrific comic book that was just released today.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk with him about that. A little later, Tom Appel, the publisher of Consumer Guide, will join us. And one of the things that Tom is going to talk about, along with recalls and the road tests, the experience of shopping for a car.
Yeah.
And he had that experience of shopping for a car for his daughter.
And he did not tell the dealerships who he was or what he does for a living. He just wanted to see, you know, how would it be going in there as a dad with a daughter who had some very specific things that she wanted in a car. And they finally did get the car after going to, I want to say, maybe a half dozen dealerships
shopping. I think he said they test drove about five different vehicles. Mm-hmm. But we'll get more from that from Tom coming up.
And answer your questions, too.
You can get to us, 312-981-7200. And coming up later tonight, we will have our last call when you can win some goodies. So write down the number, 312-981-7200. Oh, we should mention that next week, we will start a little later due to college feetball.
Mm-hmm.
And so 10-ish. And we will have Patrick Crispin. And we're going to have Robert Lorenzel, who is the author of The Uptown, Chicago's Endangered Movie Palace.
So I'm looking forward to that.
So that's coming up next week. We're going to talk with John Barry.
Grammy and Emmy winning country music singer-songwriter John Barry. John Barry, how are you this evening?
I'm so good, I can hardly believe it's me.
Well, it's so great to talk to you. This is really exciting because, quite seriously, that song, it holds up today. And that one really took you to the top of the charts and kind of changed your world, didn't it, John?
Yeah, it's a great song written by Chuck Jones and Amanda Hunt Taylor. I was just the lucky guy who drew the card, but I sure am honored that I got to sing it.
Now, did Tanya Tucker do that song before you or after you?
After
you.
She actually had scheduled. Now, it's kind of weird. She actually recorded it before I did.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not included on her record.
Oh.
Because I called to have the song put on hold with the publisher.
Uh-huh.
And they said, well, nah, Tanya's putting it on her upcoming album. And I said, well, if something happens and she doesn't use it, I want to be first in line.
Uh-huh.
And we were both on Capitol Records at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I called my contact at the label, and she had turned her album in completed.
Oh.
And Your Love Amazes Me was not on it.
What?
So I feel fortunate that I got to record it.
Yeah.
And now she included her version on her greatest hits records a few years later.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a hit with it. It was fabulous. Great.
Yeah.
It's one of those songs that the singer is just not that important.
The lyrics are so powerful.
Yeah. And she reminds me every time I see her that I owe her.
Oh, that's great.
Well, before we get too far, we should mention that one of the many reasons that we're excited to talk to you, you're coming to the Chicago area. You're going to be at Hey Nonny.
Oh, my goodness gracious. What a cool place that is. If you or your listeners have never been to Hey Nonny, go see somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go to this venue. It's very intimate. It can't hold 200 people. Just awesome. It's a great, great room, and I love playing there.
And you're going to be there just a couple days for a birthday, right? You got a birthday on the 14th of September?
Yeah. When am I playing there the 12th?
You're going to be there on the 12th, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, come on.
Can we take you into the Wayback Machine for a few minutes?
Oh, yeah.
All right, we're going to take you back. When did you start playing guitar?
Summer of 1972.
Oh, you remember. Wow.
Summer before, sorry, 8th grade.
Okay.
Who or what made you want to play guitar?
Well, my older brother played. And like all younger brothers, they won't kind of do what the older brother does. And I started banging around. He didn't have time to show me anything. So my mom showed me three chords. One of them wasn't quite right, but the other two were good. And she couldn't quite make a regular G. She did what we call a cheater G. And so I learned my three chords, and she taught me this little gospel song, Give Me Oil in My Lamp, Keep Me Burning, Burning, Burning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Little gospel thing. And a couple of weeks later, I went to church camp, and I played that song every day. I was nonstop. And I was down on the boat dock one day by the lake by myself playing my little guitar and banging around singing. And I heard a noise behind me. I turned around, and there's three cute little girls back there giggling, listening to me play. And I knew what my calling was.
That was it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so that was as you were going into eighth grade. But prior to that, when people would say, Johnny, son, when you grow up, what do you want to be? Did you say you wanted to be in the music business?
No, I didn't know.
You didn't know?
No. It was right after that I was just turning 13 and started high school with all the same kids I went to elementary school with. And I was on the cross-country team in high school. And I knew everybody there. And it was just a great beginning to my high school years. And over Thanksgiving, that Friday before Thanksgiving break, I said, "Look, have a great Thanksgiving. We'll see you. See you next week." And over Thanksgiving, we moved.
Oh.
And so, I never saw those people again.
Mm.
And I went from going from high school, I knew everybody, including my older brother, who was also on cross country team, and knowing all these people, to going to a school on the other side of the county that was not as well known for its sports program, and it was kind of had a little rough edge reputation, and I had no interest in being there whatsoever.
Oh.
But my guitar was sort of my little security blanket, and just sort of there's something between me and them.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of this wall. That was my little wall. And but I made some lifelong friends at that school, people that I made music with over the years. Because I was there almost the entire eighth grade year. mm-hmm. and then 9/11/12, and graduated from there, and lived in that neighborhood for years, and made some lifelong friends, and it ended up being a great move. And hard to understand when you're 13 years old.
Yeah, it's so painful.
My dad helped me build a little studio in the basement of our house, and we put in a little four-track reel-to-reel recorder, and I cut my first three albums in that little studio.
That's amazing.
Was there
and, of course, the quality, I got better quality recording on my iPhone than that. But.
Was there a point that you realized, not only do I enjoy doing this, but you know, I think I'm going to be able to make a living doing this. I think this is going to be my career. Was there a particular point or an event that made you think, okay, this is cool, I'm going to do this?
Well, it wasn't cool. I was forced into it. Let me think. It was 81. Fall of 81. I was riding a motorcycle through a parking lot, northeast Atlanta.
Oh.
And a lady ran a stop sign and hit me and broke both my legs and my hip. And I could not work in the factory I was working in anymore. But I could sit on a stool and play the guitar.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
And that's all I've done since.
Wow.
And you have had your share of physical challenges. It wasn't all that long ago that you wound up having to have your tonsils removed because of
cancer
on your tonsils.
Yeah. I had a tumor growing out of one of my tonsils. Ooh. And another tumor developing in the other tonsil. And so I had tonsils removed. I had 35 radiation treatments and 8 chemotherapy treatments and lost 80 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
It was tough. And anyone who's been through that type of radiation and chemo, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It's crazy. My bass player, Michael, we've been playing music together for many, many years. He had same cancer a year before I did.
Wow.
And HPV cancer is pretty prevalent in men of our age for some reason. And so he told me when we found out I had it, he said, get a feeding tube. He said, just do it. He said, and you're not going to like it, but he said, I'm telling you. He said, I'm a very adventurous eater.
Mm-hmm.
And if I hadn't had it, I don't know if I'd have survived. He said,
yeah.
I know you are not an adventurous eater. Hmm. You're a very habitual eater. If you can't eat what you want, you won't eat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he said, you won't survive it.
You'll starve to death.
I didn't need any solid food from the end of February until November.
Oh, well, boy. Did you have to learn how to sing, though, after you went through that ordeal?
Well, crazy as it all is, I mean, my treatments ended early May, and I had there was a date on the books that I wouldn't let. I held on to it. I wasn't going to cancel it.
Hmm.
It was, and they wanted me to come to a college, a Christian college, small Christian college in Arkansas, and sing a couple of songs, but tell my story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's before I had cancer. It was booked.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a fundraiser, and they wanted me to come and speak at this event and sing a couple songs. And it was my life goal at that point,
mm-hmm.
to make that happen. And so in May of 2019, all this started up the first week of January of 19. So May of 19, I went and did that little event,
mm-hmm.
and it was monumental for me.
But sure,
it was. God was faithful to see me through and restore my voice. And there are those who think I sing better than I used to.
I was kind of going to say that your voice has really, I don't know, there's a warmth to it.
Yeah.
Has just come with time and using it the way you have over the years. We want our listeners to look it up if you haven't seen the video. All Come Together. And it was just last year that John Berry did that.
I love that song. That is John Barry and friends like Keb Mo and John Oates and a whole bunch more. And that is it. You wrote that, didn't you, John? It was like a fundraiser for the benefit for Hurricane Helene?
Hurricane Harvey.
Hurricane Harvey, okay.
Yeah. Matter of fact, the guy who sang that, the last line on the chorus, that's Chuck Jones, the guy who wrote Your Love Amazes Me.
Oh my goodness!
And I was at Chuck's house writing the day that flood happened.
Mm-hmm.
The hurricane had hit the coast kind of the day before,
mm-hmm.
but then the water started coming up. So water started rising the next day, and just flooded Houston. And my wife and Robin and our wrestler Michael, the three of us got on our tour bus and drove out to Houston and called Samaritan's Purse.
Mm-hmm.
Because we knew they were on the ground there, and we volunteered with them mucking out houses for a week.
Well,
and it's pretty incredible. And but I wrote that song with Chuck, and matter of fact, I sent a verse and a chorus of it to Robin on my phone, and she sent me a note back. She said, "Don't finish it till you don't come home till you're finished."
It's a powerful song. It really is.
Well, by the time I got home, my manager and Robin had assembled all those people to record it 3 days later.
Wow. And the video's wonderful, too. Yeah, it really is.
A lot of fun.
You mentioned your wife, Robin. You guys have been married for 30, how many years?
37 years.
Okay, we're 41 years working together.
Come on.
Do you often, because you guys work together, do people say to you, how is it that you can work together and be married? Because for 41 years, we've heard that.
We get that all the time.
All the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I say it every day. How do we do this? But we do. We work well together, and there are sometimes we don't work well together,
mm-hmm.
and then we just have to go get some air.
Because you're human, that's why. There are those days when, you know, like I say to Steve, every couple should have a radio show, because if you want it to work, you set everything at the door when you walk in and sit behind the microphone, then you forget that you were angry before you went on the air. Right? Will Robin be with you at Hey Nannies?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Good, because she sings with you.
Michael will be playing bass. We've been singing. We got married like 37 years ago, but I didn't really know she sang when we got married.
Huh.
And the only thing she's ever done in singing wise is in chorus in school,
mm-hmm.
and some things like that. And after we got married, the pastor, Fred Rowell, at our church. We got married at Green Acres Baptist Church, and we got married at Green Acres because it's the place to be. But Fred asked me, he asked if I'd come to a Christmas show at the church. And I'm sure some of the folks at that little Baptist church were shocked that Fred had invited the guy who played at all the bars to come sing a Christmas show at the church.
Mm-hmm.
But Fred saw something in my heart, maybe that I didn't even see in myself. And we did the show, and it was just great, and it was so much fun. And Robin sang with us at that.
Oh.
And then I had recorded a couple of demos with a producer in Nashville, and Kathy Matea sang backup on the demos. And so Robin learned those songs, and when we play those songs at the clubs that I played in Athens, Robin would get up and sing with us.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, people loved it, and it was just like, and we kept developing that, and it turned into, you know, it just works really well. She won't sing by herself, but she has got the gift of harmonizing.
Ah.
And that's a gift.
Yeah, really nice. John, I want to talk about one of your songs that's one of my all-time favorites, Kiss Me in the Car.
No, I don't think you can kiss him in the car.
John, we were talking about you performing with your wife, Robin. You have a son that's also a musician, don't you?
Both of them. Two of them. My son, Kalen James.
Mm-hmm.
Kalen James is he's about 30 years old now. He, up until so recently, has been playing drums with us for about the past 10 years.
Oh, wow.
And he and his family have moved out to Texas,
mm-hmm.
where my other son lives. and my other son, Sean, is a year older, and he's a musician and also builds houses and things like that. But he's got a band called Joint Custody.
Oh.
And they're terrific. Ain't your daddy's country, that's for sure.
That's very cool. And you are a granddaddy, aren't you?
Yeah, my son Sean's got two little girls, one's 6 months old and one 5 years old. And then Kaylin, he and his wife have got a little boy, Isaac James, who's 3 and a half, and he is Papa's little buddy.
Yeah. Kaylin is a real interesting name. It's spelled C-A-E, is that
L-A-N.
Right?
L-A-N.
L-A-N.
Yeah.
Is there a story behind his name?
Well, all three of our kids have Irish type names, Taylor Marie, mm-hmm. Sean Thomas, and Kaylin James. Kaylin was born a month early, month and a half, and he needed a powerful name, and Kaylin means mighty in battle.
Oh. Mm. Wow, and, perfect.
And he was born a month and a half early, and he's never been late for anything.
Bless his heart.
Never. Yeah. He's never late.
Wow. Are you going to go back in the studio and do any new recording?
Please say yes.
Well, we've been kicking around some ideas of doing a record, of doing songs that really influenced, songs that I really loved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just some really out there stuff and stuff that I used to play when I played the bars and stuff and clubs, mm-hmm. and songs that I really loved a lot. And so we'll see. We'll see what happens. And, I was hoping to get it done this fall, if at all possible. So we're kind of behind the eight ball now, but we could still get it done. But it's always nice to have a new piece of music like that to take, because this is our 29th year doing a Christmas tour, uh-huh. and it's always great to have a new piece of music to take with us.
Sure.
Gives us new songs for the first part of the show, and also gives us some merchandise piece. So.
Mm-hmm.
I've always thought from listening to a lot of the things you've done in the past that your music collection is probably pretty eclectic, isn't it?
Yeah, everything from Hank Jr. to Cat Stevens.
So, yeah.
And I grew up in a home where my dad loved to listen to Van Cliver and play the piano, and my mom listened to gospel music, and my sister was listening to pop radio, and the Carole King Tapestry album kind of changed everything for me. And,
sure.
And then my brother became an opera singer.
What?
So there was all kinds of weird music in our house.
Yeah. And you had a dad that was so supportive that he helped you build that studio right there in the house.
Yeah.
Before kids were doing albums in their bedroom.
Yeah.
Right?
But we were doing albums before albums were cool.
Yeah.
And for a lot of years, you got to hang out with a dear friend of ours, Charlie Daniels.
Oh, man. What a guy. It's hard to express what a genuine, kind person he was.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I was represented by David Corlew, who was his manager all these years. Mm-hmm. And David signed me to a management deal. I was with him for 5 years. And their office was out at Charlie's Farm.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would run into him quite a bit, and he invited me to come. He said, he called and said, "Hey, boy, I got Hal Ketchum coming over. Won't you come over and let's recut? We're going to do a retake of Long Haired Country Boy."
Oh,
and I couldn't think of two better kids to do it. So come over. So we did, and then we went to his farm and sat out on the porch and shot a video for it. So it was a lot of fun.
For a lot of years, we had Charlie. He would join us every New Year's Eve from wherever he happened to be. And we had Charlie in the studio with him. And I will never forget that we did a Christmas special, and Charlie recorded and sent us a special Christmas story that we aired in our Christmas.
That he wrote.
He was a wonderful guy.
And he gave us the best gift that any celebrity's ever given us. He gave us a country ham. I mean, ham. It was a $150 ham. I said, yeah. I'm not sure we're worthy of this. And didn't he tell you one time that you, as a performer, you don't worry about the empty seats. You're playing to the people who came to see you, right?
Yeah, don't worry about the ones who didn't come.
Yeah, that's great.
Same for the ones who are there. We, my wife and I had a podcast during COVID called Faith, Family, and Friends.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have friends either phone in or come over, and we would talk about how their faith, their family, and their friends had influenced their lives and their careers. And we spoke with Charlie on the phone, and he passed away 4 days later.
Oh, my.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
And as a matter of fact, that podcast, that show, you can go to johnberry.com and listen to it.
Great. It's we'll do that.
And it took me months before I could edit the show.
Mm-hmm.
It would just move my heart.
Sure.
And the only thing I edited out all the stupid stuff I said. I didn't edit out any. I left every syllable Charlie uttered because there are no.
Yeah.
And he mentioned in the first, my wife, she knows exactly because she counted. I can't remember. In the next first few minutes of the show, he talked about being in heaven 3 times.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I got to listen to that. Yeah.
It's just a sweet, sweet conversation with a good friend.
Yeah.
When we did our book about Les Paul, Charlie was nice enough to write a whole chapter about how we introduced him to Les Paul.
A quick story, John. Oh. Honest to goodness, John Berry, he was sitting in studio with us, and he thought that Les Paul had passed away.
Because Charlie and I were talking about guitars, and we started talking about the Les Paul guitars. And he said, yeah, it's a shame I never got to meet him. And he had the feeling that Les had passed away. I quietly told our producer, get Les on the phone.
Which was evil. On live radio.
So then we said, Charlie, we got somebody who wants to say hi to you. And it was Les. And Charlie was blown away. And he had his bus parked outside our studio because he just finished up a tour.
Yeah.
He left our show, got on the bus, drove to New York, and he was on stage with Les Paul that following Monday night.
Yeah.
How about that?
Great story. It was an evil thing for Steve to do because I was sitting next to Charlie, and he's like, whoa, am I talking to a ghost?
That brought him so much joy. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, it has been so much joy for us to meet you and to get to talk to you. And Lord willing, on the 12th of February, we're going to come out and see you at Hey Nannies.
And can we impose on you, if you're going to be back in the Chicago area, can we get you in the studio?
Sure.
Oh, good. When you're driving through Chicago, you bring that guitar in here, and we'll just spend a few hours and just talk about music and get you to play some songs. But until that happens, people can come see John Berry at Hey Nannies on Friday night, September 12th at 7:30 in the evening. And it is an evening with you, and I'm very excited for you, and I'm so happy that you're coming back through town, John. Thank you for joining us tonight.
I'm really looking forward to being there, and I know that there's a stop at my favorite hot dog place. And is it Portillo's?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
You got to have a Chicago dog. That's for sure.
I got to have a dog. Yeah, come on.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John. This has been a genuine pleasure.
It's been terrific being with y'all. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye now.
And John is going to be at Hey Nannies Friday, September 12th at 7:30, an evening with John Berry, Hey Nannies in Arlington Heights. If you've been with us for a while, you've heard some of our conversations with a very special lady.
Yes, the delightful Alice Selke. It was just back in early July that we got to talk to Alice to wish her a happy 107th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's what I said, 107. We had a wonderful conversation with her. Well, lo and behold, we have another Selke with us tonight. It's her grandson who's here from Arizona. Hey, Don.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, it's good to have you in studio.
It's a pleasure to be here, and it's exciting.
Well, Don is also a radio guy / geek. Is that fair to say?
That is very fair to say.
You have an internet radio station.
I sure do.
Tell us about it.
All right. I started an internet radio station about 15 years ago as a hobby. And
now you'd been a firefighter, right?
No, I was a truck driver.
Truck driver. Actually. It was your daddy that was a firefighter and your grandpa.
My father and grandfather, both firefighters.
Right.
And I started this station just as a hobby. And it basically turned into a real radio station over the years. And it just grew and grew and grew. And it's to the point where it's almost a full-time job now.
Yeah. And it's called?
Super CFL Radio. And you, supercflradio.com.
So, and obviously people in the Chicago area recognize Super CFL.
Oh, absolutely.
And I have to ask you, how did you land on Super CFL? I mean, that's for people in this area, that's instant identification.
Well, what happened was I moved back to Chicago in 1990, and a radio station in southwestern the suburban area out of Morris, Illinois, was on the air, and I was driving truck in this area, and I'm always thumbing through the dial trying mm-hmm. to find something that was a little different, mm-hmm. and I landed on 104.7 FM, and my good friend Rafe Sampson was on the air that day, and they were playing top 40 70s music. I heard Jackie Blue mm-hmm. by the Ozark Mountain Daredevils. I said, wait a minute, am I in some kind of a dream here? And I was immediately attached to the radio station. And unfortunately, it lasted up until about 1994 and mm-hmm. went away. And over the years, it just never left me. And about 2010, I had friends send me cart tapes of all the jingle packages and everything. Mm-hmm. And one of my sons introduced me to computers and how you could play music over the computer. Ah. And back then, we were using different encoders to get out on the internet. And he said, hey, Dad, why don't you start an internet radio station? Because you are very good at it. Mm-hmm. And I said, wow, that's a great idea.
That's all you needed, that little push.
That's all I needed. And I always associated music with life events. And he said, you're so personable on the mm-hmm. radio that maybe you could do pretty well at this. So I started out on a couple different sites and wound up landing where I'm at today, which is actually VaughnLive.tv. And it just started growing. And then every Thursday night, I do a live radio show where I actually allow listeners to pick the music they want to hear. And it's mm-hmm. anything from the 60s, 70s, and early to mid-1980s. But we mainly stick with the 60s and 70s. And my group that listen to me are older individuals. Mm-hmm. And it blossomed. And I was really excited about it. And then, of course, the original 104.7 FM DJs from Morris all jumped on board. Rafe Sampson, which he's a voiceover artist, did all my sweepers for me. Mm-hmm. So I got his voice involved in it.
Nice.
And then I got a few others. Gary Rivers, which he's on the air in Ohio now. He was excited by the fact that I was tributing their radio station. Hmm. And they said, our little oldies radio station mm-hmm. in southwestern suburban Chicago, you remember after all these years and you're tributing yeah. us? And they were just so excited by this.
But as a truck driver, we can relate, 27 years of doing the all-night show.
Yeah,
our core audience was truck drivers even before cell phones. So they yeah. were listening the old-fashioned way. And if they wanted to call, a lot of times they were going to a truck stop.
Absolutely.
And holding on the line to get on the air. And when cell phones became popular, it was life-changing on our show because, boom, they could be right there.
Absolutely. And I was one of them.
Of course, because you were born and raised in this area.
Yeah, I absolutely was. And I think that we actually grew up in a very special point in time mm-hmm. with the music and all the events that went on. And, of course, we had the two dueling big AM top 40 radio right. stations back in the day. And you had to decide which one you were listening to.
But in fact, that's going to be a chapter in the second book that Johnny and I are working on. At that time, in the mid-70s, I was over at the once big 89.
Yeah.
And the battle between LS and CFL was the last major market top 40 radio battle. And I will never forget the day we had a staff meeting, and Lou Jack and everybody else was in the staff meeting. And, no, that's right. Lou Jack was over at CFL at that point. So it would have been Tommy Edwards And anyhow, the whole staff was there, Yvonne Daniels. And we found out that WCFL was changing formats. That meant two things. On one hand, it meant we won the battle.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, it meant, oops, we now have to change our focus because it's now going to be us against the FM music stations. Whole different ball of wax, because you didn't have that major market 2 a.m. powerhouse top 40 radio stations to keep people on the AM dial. So it was a whole different mindset. In fact, it sounds like a lot of things came together for you as you were putting the station together, because there is such a fan base for Super CFL.
Absolutely, there sure is. And it as soon as people find out about it, they're just glued to the radio station. And the fact that we're playing 60s and 70s top 40, we're trying to use some of the old WCFL playlists, it generates a lot of interest in the radio station. And some of the local Chicagoland people like Bart Shore and all them are all attracted to trying to get some of their programming on that radio station because of that.
We got to figure out how to make you rich, though, working as hard as you are doing this, right?
But again, because some people were just texting, again, if they want to find the radio station, how do they do it? What are they
All they have to do is go into Google or anywhere on the internet and just type in Super CFL Radio or supercflradio.com.
So now that running this radio station kind of consumes you, because you said a few minutes ago that it's a lot like a full-time job now, and you're not trucking anymore, so you have that time to do it. Your son is the one that suggested back 15 years ago that you should do this. Does he now think that he created a monster by pushing you in that direction?
Yes, he does. And I talk to him on the phone all the time when I'm frustrated, I can't get something to work right, or I have some listeners giving me a few issues. And he says, Dad, you're taking this too seriously. You're taking this too seriously. I said, but I am serious about
it. It's serious business.
Yes, it is. And I've always been dedicated to my listeners. I get little messages or requests. I always make sure I pay attention to the people that pay attention to this radio station and pay attention to me.
And that's why, because we take texts throughout the show, I respond to the texts. And sometimes people are like, oh, I thought your people would be answering me. No, no, no.
Especially if somebody has been a little snarky with a text and they get a response from Jenny. What? Huh?
Oh, I say, would your mother appreciate the fact that you're talking to me like that? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
Oh, absolutely.
A different song they're singing then.
Absolutely. Or it's just like music. Everybody's got their taste. Some of the music you play, people absolutely love it. And some people say, why are you playing that?
We had a program director that said that's why there's chocolate and vanilla. Mm-hmm. You know?
Absolutely.
And as I often say, hey, this is 5 hours on a Saturday night. If you can't get over it, come on. Well, we're very lucky. I already counted. We had 18 states check in.
Wow.
And that took the time to check in and say, I'm listening to you in Nebraska, in Kansas, in Florida. And our lives have changed, Don. You know that thanks to the internet.
Absolutely. I have listeners all around the world.
Isn't
that
amazing?
I have New Zealand, Germany, Australia, the UK.
Yeah.
And they log into my chat room and they say, hey, Don, I'm listening to you. I'm in Ireland.
And they love the music of
the
60s they do. And 70s.
Yeah.
And they know more about that music than we know here in this country.
Most of them do.
Yeah.
We're getting a lot of texts. Several people at 312-981-7200 want to know how Alice is doing.
Alice is doing just fine. I hadn't seen her in about 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I try to make it a point to see her. But the funny thing is, Alice always calls me to see how I'm doing.
And she's 107.
She's 107, and she calls me up. She goes, Dondi, how are you doing? I haven't heard from you in a couple of days, or I haven't heard from you from a week. I want to make sure you're feeling all right. I go, Graham, how are you doing?
Yeah, at 107. And you were her first grandson.
Yes, I was.
Her first grandchild.
Yes, I was.
Okay.
Well. I actually put her on the air on my station, too. And my listeners absolutely love her.
And you said off the air that when we had her on, we had a wonderful conversation with her for her birthday, that you were able to take that interview and then record it for family members so that they would have that treasure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well... Alice, if you're listening, and I think you are, we love you, and we really appreciate you listening and introducing us to your grandson, Don.
And Grandma, we love you a lot. You know that.
You got a sack that you're taking home with you just for her, right?
And we're not going to say what's in that sack.
That's right.
No, and I'm not going to say anything either. It's a surprise.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, you're welcome to stick around and watch the magic, the man and woman behind the curtain, if you want, Don.
Oh, yeah.
They'll be in here in a little
Who's
bit.
Who's that man behind the curtain?
That's right.
Thanks for hanging out with us. It's been a pleasure to meet you, Don.
It's been a pleasure to be with you both as well.
We are going to segue to a conversation. A lot of people have been curious about this mentioned that. This is kind of part two of a conversation we started
last year, June. Yeah, last summer. And for those who wonder, you know, do you ever kind of get us up to date on these guests that you have on the show?
We are going to introduce our next guest.
Yes, 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 because our next guest is responsible for what's been called a love letter to Chicago. John Dudley is in the studio with us. And John, it was a year ago June when we first talked, right?
Yeah, that's right. We kickstarted our love letter to Chicago. And now we finally have it in our hands. Big Shoulders, number one, the new comic series.
It's beautiful.
It is so well done.
It is. The art is gorgeous. I mean, everything down to the paper quality is wonderful. Congratulations, John.
Thank you.
Because a year ago, it was a dream. And you put it out there, and you had some examples, and it caught our attention. Steve, the comic collector, caught our attention, and the fact that it was all about Chicago landmarks and just the taste of the grittiness of Chicago. And you captured it in the book.
Well, not just me. I have to give 50%+ credit to Scott Gray, the artist and co-creator of the project.
But yeah, you're the writer, right?
Correct.
The whole concept. And I don't think we realized back when we talked last summer that it was going to be a series.
That's right. Yeah. We're planning on 6 issues. It's all been meticulously plotted, I will say. But that that real capturing of Chicago that Scott's been able to lay down, it does take time, and we're taking our time to do it just right.
There are moments in the book when I found myself looking at some of the images in one of them. I mentioned to you, Johnny, the one at O'Hare.
Yes.
Just some of the images, they're so well done. And there are things that look like things you've seen in Chicago. They may not have the identical name, but it's stuff you have seen in and around Chicago. And it is throughout the book. And the book is kind of it has music, it has fantasy, it has demons, it
art.
Has Chicago history.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating book.
And John, you're not born and raised in Chicago, right?
I am not. I found my home here, I like to say, and that's a theme of the book as well. Chicago as a crossroads place, really and truly.
Sure.
We've put kind of a fantasy overlayer. There's kind of a surrealist layer.
Fantasy, science fiction.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that feeds into the crossroads motif as well. We've got multiple genres of stories all taking place at once.
I know. That's what I love about it. Because if you have a short attention span, it's like the next page, we go into another story, but then we come back to the first one. And it's really wonderful. Is it safe to call it a graphic novel? Because I feel like if you're calling it a comic book, people are thinking, well, it's more than that. It's more like a graphic.
Yeah, that's fair to say. Once it's collected, once we've completed all 6 issues, we'd call that a graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
That's a larger comic book.
Right,
really.
Right.
Yeah.
And people should go to BigShouldersComic.com, and you can see what we're talking about. And today was the launch, and where were you and what happened?
Yeah, so I was at Challengers Comics in Conversation, which has long been a favorite comic shop here in the city for myself. And we held a launch event and signing. The owners, Patrick and Dale, were very very gracious to host, and had a lot of fun. Including a lot of friends and other Chicago natives, some of which are avid comic collectors. We're thrilled to be there, and hopefully we helped bring some business in. I know there were a lot of my friends who have young children that were buying their first comics.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, the addiction might be beginning for them as well.
Well, now you have two boys, a 7 and a 10-year-old. Do they think this is, like, so cool that dad has something to do with a flashy comic book?
Yeah, it's a neat it's a neat thing. We read a lot. That's something I'm very proud to do with my kids. But I've yet to read Big Shoulders with them. And actually, by not doing so, they're actually really interested.
Oh, sure. Yeah. They're like, what's in that book that he's not reading to us?
Yeah, so we'll make a real event of it.
Yes.
What was the genesis of the idea? Did it come to you in a dream? Were you walking down the street one day? Was it how did this all happen?
Well, I was looking for a muse, it's fair to say. And I did have a day... It was a little too perfect. I was in Lincoln Park and went to the Chicago History Museum and was thinking about Chicago history kind of holistically and thinking about, wouldn't it be cool to have a story just about Chicago, all of it? And what really struck me the more I thought about it is that you can't contain a big city, certainly not Chicago, in one story. So I wanted to tell a lot of stories. There's a comic series I loved from the 90s called Astro City.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I have just about every issue.
Oh, yeah. And it did that. It, instead of like the Marvel or DC approach of, you know, hundreds of different creators over decades creating this big, giant shared universe, Kurt Busiek and Astro City and the artist he worked with, they had one world of one world of storytelling in one book. It was like an entire Marvel universe, but you didn't have to buy 100 issues. It was all happening
standalone.
In fact, I will share with you a quick, partly personal. It was about a year or so ago that I sold most of my comic collection. I'd been collecting since the 60s. The group of comics that did not go were the Astro City comics.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And we're talking like 27 long boxes of comic books.
Oh,
and that's the only thing that was saved. Yes.
Wow.
So that was kind of your inspiration on one sense.
Had you done a comic book or anything like that before?
Yes. So I've also been very lucky to find communities of comic fans. There was a podcast I've listened to for a very long time now, 11 O'Clock Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a forum, and I would speak to people there, other would-be creators, and met now a very good friend named Don Cardenas from Chicago also. And we made comics together. We made a comic called Packs of the Low Country, which for both of us was the first, you know, we'd done short stories, things like that. It was the first time we did a full-length comic book. And we really learned how to do it.
Trial by error?
Yeah. Yeah. And, it was a great effort, and Don is still making awesome comics himself and has leveled up tremendously since then.
I'm holding a copy of Big Shoulders, but the cover that I have is different than the cover of the copy that Steve had. So tell us a story about the different covers.
Yeah. So there's one cover, and BigShouldersComic.com. You can see both if you want to follow along from home.
Mm-hmm.
The cover with a lot of purple is from the artist who does all the interior work, Scott Gray, who lives in the UK.
Right.
Has never actually been to Chicago, which is mind-blowing to me.
Yeah.
But has spent, I don't even know, countless hours on Google Images.
And looking at landmarks and important buildings to get it
did
right.
Did you send him did you wander through the city, take pictures, and say, okay, here's a thing you might want to take a look at?
Yeah, I did a lot of that, little scavenger hunts, and found some ways to kind of think about things with that little fantasy overlayer a little bit. Was inspired at one of my favorite concert venues is Shuba's Tavern. And that was the inspiration for a fictional venue we call the Fire Escape, which as our series continues, we'll spend more time there.
With the band that's going to be working there as the opener for the opener, right?
The opener of the opener, yep. They're prepared and truly believe they're going to become the fifth star on the Chicago flag someday.
That's right, yes. So now I've got the purple cover. Steve has a different cover. That cover not done by...
So that cover we were incredibly fortunate. That's by Charlie Adlard, who was the artist of The Walking Dead, which of course became incredibly famous and turned into the TV show. Mr. Adlard, who I've never met, is and Scott go way back.
Oh,
So he actually donated. I think it's fair to say he actually donated the cover for us. He didn't request any compensation.
Really?
Just a truly friendly, from my understanding, everything I know of him, I mean, I think the world of him. I can't believe he did that. I made a small donation to a charity of his choice as my token of gratitude. But we've only printed 200 copies.
Making it a collectible.
Exactly.
Right.
Go to BigShouldersComic.com. John Dudley, the writer, is in the studio with us. And segueing a little bit away from the plot of the comic, one of the very cool things about Big Shoulders is when you're finished reading the comic itself, there's a homework section near the end of the book. I love it. How did that concept come up? I love this.
Art in the back of the book, a little bit of comedy. So how did that happen? Because that's four valuable pages, and I love every inch of it.
Yeah, yeah. I think we leaned into the history tour of Chicago angle a fair bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that back matter, I think, really plays in to that. The homework assignment was Scott's idea. he gave me the homework to say, hey, I think it'd be cool for you to throw in some Chicago recommendations.
Yeah.
Which I spent a lot of time thinking about and listed a fair number that I think taken together give kind of a good holistic picture, certainly of my interests. But
yeah.
I love the Chess Records recommendation.
Oh, thank you.
I love The Devil in White City, the Eric Larson book. You recommend that people read that, too, for a taste of Chicago.
Absolutely. I think that's a good crash course, that book. I can't imagine a better entry point for learning about a lot of the foundation.
Oh, agreed.
The city that stands here today.
Now, Big Shoulders, your book, it does jump back and forth. So we go back to the time of the World's Fair and the time when Eric Larson's book, The Devil in White City, was taking place. Because the book, Big Shoulders, is science fiction fantasy, so that allows you to go back and forth in time, right?
Yep. Yeah, we can. The comic book medium as a storytelling device is really best, in my opinion, best used in that kind of expressive, surrealist way. We have a time travel mechanism by way of an immortal character that was there to take us back and unravel some clues for some of the present day storytelling.
So again, this is book number one. There will be six books. And did you say you've written the whole series now? It's ready?
Yes. We like to leave some things up to maneuverability. A lot of times when Scott brings in some of his some pages, it can spark some new ideas. If something is particularly awesome, I might move some things around so that we can have more of that awesome.
Got it. Got it. For more awesomeness in the book.
Exactly.
And Scott Gray is the artist, wonderful artist. How did you meet Scott, John?
I met him. He has worked on Doctor Who comics in the UK for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw some of his artwork, some art prints he'd done of featuring Doctor Who characters throughout the ages that just really captured my imagination. And I reached out to him about some of those prints and just sparked a conversation, shared some ideas, and,
wow.
and he was really into it as well. And
he's never been to Chicago.
No, not once.
And yet he had the drive to capture this project. That's amazing.
Yeah, and he knew a lot. He's a sharp guy.
We got to get him here, though.
I know, right?
Yeah, take him right. on a tour of all the places he's drawn for the comic book.
Right? We need some lures to get him here. I want to try to get him here for C2E2.
Oh, of course.
Which is the biggest Comic-Con here in Chicago.
Yeah.
If that happens, you have to bring him in the studio.
Oh, there
yes,
you go. Gauntlet
absolutely.
But one of the many things I love about this is, along with Chicago history and the fantasy, you're not afraid to share a little bit of who you guys are. And one of the things I'm thinking of is your reference to artificial intelligence. I love that. This
yeah.
is on the very first page. You want to explain a little bit about that? I loved it.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly in the zeitgeist, even more so than when we first wrote that a year plus ago now. And for purpose of this book, we wanted to be very clear that no AI was used in the creation of the imagery.
Mm-hmm. You've got the international symbol of AI with the red slash across it right there on the opening cover of the book.
Yep.
Which is brilliant. No supposed, quote, artificial intelligence software has been used in the making of this comic. Such software, which often allows for and even encourages plagiarism, is an assault on the freedom and livelihood of creative artists. Amen.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
A statement I do stand by.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a technology, it's a suite of technologies that can be used in unlimited ways.
Abused.
And abused. And where it does disturb me the most is in the field of the arts,
mm-hmm.
in visual arts, and we're already at a point where AI generated comics are taking off,
mm-hmm.
not just existing, but yeah. taking off.
Yeah.
Well, one of the craziest examples of artificial intelligence to me, and it's actually kind of fun. Have you heard the Johnny Cash singing "I'm a Barbie Girl"?
I haven't, but
it's frighteningly good.
It's scarily good.
Yeah, it really is.
The scariest part is when it's good.
Yes,
yeah.
Right, because then you realize how it can be abused.
Yeah,
because the few seconds of our conversation can be used to make us say things that, you know, we've never thought of saying before.
Right, and kids, younger folks don't have the concern about it,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, maybe others have.
Well, that's funny because I'm thinking, what's your timeline for the release of these? We've got the first issue of Big Shoulders. So is it going to be over the next year? What are you thinking?
I don't want to put Scott into a box too mm-hmm. much. I'd love to have the second issue done with time to spare before C2E2,
mm-hmm.
Which would be in March, I believe.
Right, March of next year.
Now that we've completed the first issue, we're very confident we're going to be able to move more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've templatized our process mm-hmm. to a degree where we just have to keep the train rolling.
I selfishly wanted to know that answer, but I'm also curious when that final issue comes out, how AI would have changed our world, because it's happening so fast. So if that's over the next 2 years, wow. You're going to have to put a sticker on the outside of this. It says no AI was used to make this. Speaking of the outside, I love the fact that you included the Carl Sandburg poem on the
yeah.
back of the comic, the whole poem.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was warranted. One thing I've learned sharing the book, as I have, is Chicago, the city of big shoulders, is not necessarily as commonly, that association is even a lot of Chicagoans
don't know
that Big Shoulders is a reference.
Yeah.
To the poem.
I hadn't read the poem since third grade in Chicago schools. That's when we read it, and that was it. And then we just know that it's the city of Big Shoulders, but it's actually a wonderful poem, and it's great that you include the whole thing on the back. Everything you did in this project, you did it right. You did really, really well. A listener wants to know, is there any chance of ever getting a large print of the comic?
Meaning a larger version of it?
Yeah.
Certainly not in the short term, I'm afraid.
But maybe when it takes off and it's wildly popular.
Yes.
And we will have a digital version made available online, which, you know, could be expanded on
sure.
your screen. Mm-hmm. That's not AI.
Yeah, that's right.
A digital version of the book is something that will happen.
Where can people get their hands on Big Shoulders?
So the easiest place anyone could get a copy is BigShouldersComic.com. We are selling copies of the regular version of the book as well as the limited edition with art by Charlie Adlard of Walking Dead fame. And then we do have copies on store shelves currently at Challengers Comics in Conversation at 1845 Northwestern mm-hmm. Avenue. Maybe check that one to be sure, but I'm pretty sure.
You were just there. But
yeah. And then local comic shops around Chicagoland.
Go into your local comic shops and
ask for it.
Yes.
About it.
Please.
Yes.
Please.
And say, John Dudley lives in Chicago. I heard him on the radio. You can get copies. I know you can.
And people, if the comic shop doesn't know how to contact, they should go to BigShouldersComic.com and cleverly click on contact.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And they'd be able to get to you.
$8 a book.
For those familiar with comic lengths, a typical issue of a comic is about 24 pages. Ours is 40. So I can call it a double-sized mm-hmm. comic. And I think you'll find a lot of words to keep you busy and beautiful imagery to dive into and get lost into a little bit.
And not just saying this because you're in the studio. This is one of those comics. I'm going to go back and read it several times because there's so much stuff going on, so much stuff plot-wise to absorb, so much stuff to look at, so much minutia in the pictures, the details. It is so well done.
I appreciate that. It's thrilling to get some feedback now that we finally finished
yeah.
the book and we're sharing it for the first time. Once we release future chapters, that minutia I think will stand out that much more because we've written well ahead and been able to seed mm-hmm. things appropriately. I mean, even on the first page, there's some juicy things that will be read differently down the line.
How long did it take you to go from the beginning idea to, okay, here's kind of where we think the end of issue 6 is going to go? How long was that? How many years was that?
It's been a couple years since the initial seed of the idea. So well over 2 years, I can confidently mm-hmm. say, a lot of mental energy.
And not just because I am the resident comic book geek of the radio station, this is something I would recommend not only for comic book geeks, but for anybody, because there is so much of a wide-ranging plot, and it works on so many levels. I think people from all demographics will find something enjoyable in it.
I hope so. One thing, being kind of an anthology book with multiple protagonists, is there are different things a reader could glob onto a little mm-hmm. bit. You might see a shade of yourself in one character more than another, and hopefully more than one.
Do you have friends that have said to you, I think Coda is me. You just didn't tell me that you were going to do a character based on me.
I hope I've hidden those a little better. But
well,
Coda,
you certainly
Coda's a nice guy.
You came up with some wild names in your book.
Yeah, that's one. You know, the names that are just fun to say out loud. Coda Walker. My favorite is Spiff Plunkett.
Yeah,
Spiff Plunkett.
And my maternal grandmother's name was Wilma Duckett. So Spiff Plunkett, you know, there's a seed of realism there.
It just doesn't roll off the tongue, though. I don't see a DJ using that name. That could be dangerous. Well, you have done really well. We're tickled to be able to say that a year ago we were talking to you and you were excited about, I'm going to get this off the ground. And over 100 people said, yeah, we want to see this happen. And so they supported you and you raised thousands of dollars to make this happen.
We're only going to let you out of here if you promise you'll come back when the second issue is coming out.
I'd be thrilled. This studio and speaking with you both is truly thrilling.
Well, thank you so much. And again, we're tickled that you're in Chicago, that this is not Des Moines or Omaha. It's Chicago. Big Shoulders is the name of John Dudley's new comic book. Book one is now out, and you can go to Big Shoulders Comic, right?
Yep.
Big Shoulders Comic.
.com. Got it. Okay. Stay with us. We're going to be talking cars because it's Tom Appel's night on the radio.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
We have so much to cover tonight, but should we start? Pardon me. I have to readjust the microphone.
We need to oil you.
Yes.
You have been busy. Can we start with the experience that you've had over the past few weeks with Harper, your daughter, car shopping?
Yeah, my daughter, who's never really cared much about cars and went into this process a little reluctantly, did ultimately take it very seriously. She's 25 years old. She finished grad school last spring. And the car that we bought her in high school, a 2014 Nissan Juke, it's not worn out. It actually runs really well, but she's ready for something a little bit newer with better connectivity. And is quieter and generally more comfortable on the highway. So we went shopping and she took it very seriously, which I'm very happy about. And we drove five cars, and we came to a conclusion that she does in fact have a car now. And that process was really interesting. And it was really interesting for me to see what she thought was important.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where I came away learning a lot, because there were things that she didn't care about my opinion about a lot of stuff, but she had some very definite opinions about things, and it was really interesting to go through this process with her.
What are some of the things that she didn't care about your opinion about what?
Things like interior quality. I mean, she could tell a nice interior from a not-so-nice interior. Not that important to her.
Hmm.
Interestingly, she wasn't super concerned about price within a reasonable range.
Okay.
She was more concerned about being comfortable. And comfortable was key. My daughter is short. She's about 5'1", 5'2", something like that, and has a hard time getting comfortable in cars.
Mm-hmm.
And outward visibility, especially to the front, is very important to her. And that was like one of her priorities, interestingly.
Well, what about the smaller things? For example, when we started road testing cars, the reason I wanted to be road testing was the things I looked for were different than the things that Steve mm-hmm. looked for. And on the list of little things, I would be frustrated when I would reach out to push a button and my long fingernail prevented me from pushing a button. And then as we got into touch screens, again, I would have a similar problem where you had to have the pad of your finger. And I'd say, well, wait a minute. All these men are testing these cars and they're not talking about these things that might be important. And then we found out that putting car seats in the back seat, that was something that reviewers weren't talking about. And that was very important to women who were saying, well, wait a minute, I got to put the car seat in and out. So were there any, like, was she... was she concerned about how many cup holders that she had in the car, for example?
No, you know, she was surprisingly interested, and I didn't think she would be, in the quality of the sound system.
Oh.
So that we paired our Bluetooth systems to each car, and she listened to those, and she found one completely unsatisfying, so we moved on from there.
Really?
But she was also...
Let me hold you on that. Which one did she find completely unsatisfying?
Which one? The Nissan Kicks disappointed.
Really?
She described it as flat, and she was not wrong. And for people who don't know, the Kicks is a subcompact crossover from Nissan, just redesigned, is finally available with all-wheel drive. Really great packaging, really great pricing, but there are a couple of dings against it. One of them is that sound system isn't awesome, but the other is that to get heated seats, you need to buy the top trim level and then an expensive sunroof package. Oh. So all of a sudden, this very affordable vehicle is $33,000. Mm-hmm. So that's a little rough.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem with some manufacturers who say, if you decide you want something, okay, you can get that something, but to get that, you have to take the package that offers the 15 other somethings that you really didn't yeah. care about.
I don't need a tow hook on the car, for example, but it goes with the heated steering wheel.
There was a long time where General Motors products, and especially the Equinox, which is very popular, the important ADAS features, advanced driver assistance things like
lane
departure.
Did you think you heard what I heard?
Yeah. And part of it may be because you sound like you're getting a cold and your voice is a little deeper tonight.
Uh-huh. But I heard you say 8-ass.
Yeah. That's.
I was like, what?
No, totally not what I was saying. That's 8-ass, boys and girls. I said it again.
You should see the look on our face.
What? Okay, Tom, spell what you're trying to say.
ADAS, and yeah, maybe I've been drinking. I don't know.
Maybe not enough. Oh, golly. All right. Now, did you say, back to your shopping with Harper, did you say that you uh-huh. did not tell anyone at a dealership who you were or what you did for a living?
I did, yeah. I kept that a secret. And then really, I didn't let anyone know anything at all until we were just about to go in the F&I office, the finance office, to finalize the deal. And I thought maybe if they knew that then, we'd have less hassle. And we didn't have any hassle. So
I'm sorry, I just heard you say the F&I, and I'm like, what? What's is he swearing again?
That's sometimes referred to as the box, but it's the last stage of buying a car.
Okay.
You've agreed to buy a car. You've negotiated a deal. You're all done. You're all done, but you do have to go into this box and then talk to this guy who does all your paperwork. And while mm-hmm. he's doing the paperwork, he tries to sell you service contracts, yep. additional insurance, warranty, nothing that you need, and everything that you can buy later if you want it. So don't be forced into doing anything.
Were you guys worn out by the time you got in the box? Did you just say, just please pick up the pace?
We did, yeah. Actually, we had to wait about an hour to get into the box. And every place we drove a car, first of all, the experience is a lot more pleasant than it used to be. There was no hard sales whatsoever, which was nice. But it did take a long time to kind of get set up to drive a car. Mm. They had to run her driver's license and get a car and pull it around. And I don't think we were able to do one dealership in less than 2 hours. So it took us, mm-hmm. what was it, 2.5 days to drive everything sure. we drove.
Yeah.
I want to go back to something you mentioned before, because some people may not realize how important it is. You mentioned that Harper is shorter, and we've talked mm-hmm. about this with Joel Simonello. Shorter yep. drivers have a number of problems. One of them is the steering wheel, possible airbags deploying. You want to be far enough away, but yet you want to be close enough so that a short person's feet can't actually touch the pedals. And sometimes that can be problematic. And being able to see over the dash, that can be problematic too. So really, Harper's height is its own thing when you decided you were going to shop for cars.
It was, yeah. And the other thing that she noticed, and I've noticed this myself, and I'm 6'1", is that it's getting harder to see the corner, the right front corner of the
yes.
car, mm-hmm. or certainly past it. And it's hard to even know where a curb is. And I think that's rough, and it's got to be really rough for someone who's fully a foot shorter than
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
So that's not just us. As a matter of fact, in our newer car that we absolutely love, both of us have noticed that we really have to pay attention to the
it scares
the front fenders.
The right fender. I'm like, I where is it? And
right.
You know, I've driven big cars all my life, and all of a sudden I'm like, it's a weird illusion. Like, there's no right corner up there.
And a lot of it has to do with the styling, the yeah. aerodynamic styling mm-hmm. of cars, and that's nice for styling, but not so nice when you're trying to figure out where you're aiming the car.
Like parking the car, for example. Well, do you feel comfortable telling us what she settled on?
Yeah, we found a great car. We found a one-year-old 2024 Mazda CX-30 with 8,000 miles on the odometer that was being sold as certified pre-owned. And CPO is sort of this interesting level of ownership between used and new that includes additional warranty services, a couple of other perks, plus a guarantee that everything's been inspected before it was sold. And these are usually, if you go CPO, you want it to be of the brand of the car, basically, so that you have this factory warranty backing you. But she bought a carbon edition turbo CX-30. It's a very small crossover. It's really good looking, fun to drive. It's quick, reasonably good mileage. And this was one of the most important things too. Her dog crate fits in the back seat. So she's got a 50 pound pooch that she'll be shuttling around.
That's true. Yeah.
Okay. Just kind of a general thing for anyone looking for cars, new cars, used cars, whatever, just some things they should keep in mind when they're going through the process. And I would assume number one on the list is never go in with a case of new car fever.
Oh, that's a great piece of advice. Yeah, expect the process to take a month. Maybe a couple of weeks. You don't want to rush, and you do want to drive anything, and you don't want to fall in love with a car until you've driven everything on your list. So that's important. And one thing that you can do, too, is go shopping when dealers tend to be slow, which is Friday evenings, during the week, during the day. And you'll have better luck getting the attention of a dealer or salesman. And also, it'll be easier to test drive the vehicle because there'll be less traffic. So, great idea to go when they're not busy. And additionally, as long as you're making time, take the time to test drive. Now, in every single case, my daughter asked to go around again. And in every single case, the salesman accommodated. So you want to spend that time in the car. You want to hit the highway. You want to drive in traffic. You want to try stop and go. And importantly, too, make sure you try the brakes. Try hitting the gas hard. Don't be afraid to do that. And if you're going from a car that you've had for a long time that's a regular automatic and you're aware that you're getting into a car with a CVT, pay attention to that. Pay attention to the transmission. You may not like it. And a lot of people don't. And that's okay. You just don't want that car then.
Yeah.
How many times, now you said you test drove five different vehicles. Out of those five, how many times did the salesperson go with you, or how many times did they toss you the keys and say, see you back here in an hour?
Salesperson came with us in every single time.
Really?
Interesting.
Yeah.
I say interesting because the last car that we bought, they tossed us the keys and said, okay, we'll see.
And again, they did not know us from Adam.
No.
We just walked in off the street.
Yep.
And I think it might be an age thing because our neighbor told us he was very frustrated. He's 20-something. Mm-hmm. And he said, every time I go in shopping for a car and I've got the money, I want to buy a car.
Yeah.
He said, I always feel like I'm a second-class citizen because, number one, as you said, Tom, they got to go through all the paperwork to find out who you are, check your license, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And I understand that. But then you'd get the neighbor said you'd get somebody sit in the front seat with you and they're talking and you're trying to listen to the car and you're trying to get a sense of what's going on.
And they're trying to adjust the sound system. And I have turned off the sound system and told the person, I want to hear the car.
Yeah.
I want to hear what the car is doing. When we're in the parking lot, we can fool with the sound system.
I'm wondering if, and I hadn't considered this until just now, bringing somebody with you might help because Harper and I were always in the front seats and we had, a quiet conversation going on between us, which I think the salespersons generally were reluctant to break into.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps that works. I don't know. But we didn't have that problem.
I think you're right, because wouldn't it be weird if a salesman gets in the back seat, driving Miss Daisy,
and
you've got someone that's road testing the vehicle. So, I think that's what we should tell him. You have to have someone take one of us with you. You got to have someone with you if you're going to go shopping for the car.
Now, you mentioned that the process took about a month. So did you take a significant amount of time before you even went to dealerships to narrow down with Harper the kind of vehicle she would be interested in?
We did, yeah. I kept sending her cars to consider, and we ended up looking at about five cars. I sent her probably closer to 10. But she looked at them. She wanted to have a color that was unusual, that was important to her. She wanted a certain amount of space in the back seat. She didn't need a lot, but she did have to get this dog crate back there.
Mm-hmm.
And then she did want something that was fast. So she is my daughter in that way. So that was a thing, too. And in fact, we found a couple of cars were really not up to the her power demands.
Mm-hmm.
Did you run into any problems with vehicle availability, chip shortage problems? Or we don't have this option on the car because...
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, Steve.
No,
that's
all right.
We ran into one of the cars we wanted to drive and didn't was the Hyundai Kona. The Hyundai Kona is Hyundai's smallest crossover. Well, there is the Venue, which is too small for most people, mm-hmm. but it's a pretty popular small crossover, and it's mechanically very similar to the Kia Seltos. We went to two dealerships just to confirm this, but they said they had none. They had sold out of 2025s and didn't expect to get 2026s anytime soon.
Wow.
And I wonder if the delay in filling the supply chain is, in fact, tariff-related. Because those are low margin cars, mm-hmm. they, you know, some of them do come from overseas, and mm-hmm. I think that they're just not going to stock them for a while until they figure out what's going on.
Real quick, a listener from 319 area code says, for loyal buyers who trust a maker, for example, Toyota, do you see an advantage or disadvantage of going to the same salesperson, same dealership?
Trust but verify. I think that if you make a friend at a dealership, that's great if you can give them business twice, because one of the things that they can do for you is help you get a service appointment mm-hmm. or try to get you scheduled for, you know, a recall if such a thing happens. It's good to have somebody there who will help you out if you trust them. So if mm-hmm. that works for you, that's great. Yeah, it's always great. And they're always happy for the repeat business because it's an easier sale for them.
And a listener who knows cars, he checks in every time we talk cars, 872 area code. Number one, he said, we need to go back to fender ornaments in order to gauge the corners of our vehicles. And
right.
He sent a picture of a 1960 Mercury with those weird little doodads on each corner. So, yeah, you could definitely see the corners of that vehicle. And he also suggested that if you're car shopping and buying used, along with Carfax, take the VIN number down and pay a visit to a manufacturer's dealer and have the service department run the VIN number. They'll be able to see any warranty work, if it's a buyback and a service date, selling dealership, and any recalls that have been performed or need to be performed.
And I want to go back to something you mentioned, Tom. You were talking uh-huh. about the certified cars.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that it is often better to buy a certified car, for example, a Cadillac from a certified Cadillac dealer, Lexus,
yes.
whatever. Why?
Because those programs, the best of those programs, are in fact manufacturer supported. And there's four dealers to sort of prop up the value of used vehicles and to make used vehicles easier to sell. So what you're getting is an extension of the manufacturer's warranty. And that's key. And you want that. So there's really no, it's seamless. You can just take the car to any Cadillac dealer or any Mazda dealer, whatever your brand of car is, and there won't be any questions about the extended part of the warranty. It'll be on record, and you won't have to submit a claim or anything like that. So super simple. And surprisingly, there are a lot of one-year-old cars out there right now that are CPO, certified pre-owned, really worth someone to have a look at. Typically, CPO adds about $1,000 or $1,500 to the price, but you do have a car that was refurbished and it has the extended warranty and has been inspected. So I think it's worth it.
So important to get the Ford with the Ford certified warranty rather
yeah.
than Tom's cartoons warranty.
Yeah, the aftermarket.
Right. Yeah, that Tom guy, I don't trust him.
So what are you driving?
Oh, man, I've had two crazy weeks. I'm so glad you asked. So I am driving the 2025 Volkswagen ID. Buzz.
Oh, yeah.
And that is the Volkswagen electric minivan, and it is a hoot to drive. It is surprisingly functional. It looks like it's fun in games, but it works very well as a minivan. It is a little bit smaller than the other minivans out there. But it is still functional, perfect for a family of six. Lots of power, great handling, really fun, quirky exterior styling, surprisingly lively, bright, and modern interior styling. The whole system works really well. As I mentioned, it's electric. That contributes to it being quick. The only real downside here is that the range isn't what the range really should be for a vehicle like this. It's about 235 miles, according to the EPA. But that said, this week and these wonderful temperatures that we're experiencing in Chicago, and batteries like the same weather we do, this vehicle will easily go 300 miles on a charge in this kind of weather.
I'm surprised to hear you say that it's not as large as some, because looking at the pictures, style-wise, it looks like a big honking vehicle.
Yeah, I was surprised by this too. I did some checking just before we went on air. It's about 10 inches shorter than a Chrysler Pacifica.
Really?
Slightly narrower. Yeah, but it is much higher. It's much higher. It's 6 inches higher.
Hmm.
So you have this added space if you're stacking stuff straight up. But
it
feels wonderfully roomy.
Is it a big attention getter? Do you find people are like, whoa, what's that?
Oh, man. Oh, so many people like me now. I've been waved at and thumbsed up. And people
tooting their horn
me.
And, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, they recognize me from the radio. And I'm like, oh, that's not it.
So. No. Now, you also spent some time in a new Subaru, right?
I did, yeah. We recently tested. And here's the thing about this review. It's got a lifespan. Subaru is going to bring out a brand new Outback soon. But I drove the 2025 Subaru Outback, and it's a wonderful vehicle. And
I love that vehicle.
Yeah, it's less than 50 grand, fully loaded. It feels like a luxury vehicle. It's fantastic in the snow. Now, I didn't drive this one in the snow, but I've driven them before in the snow.
Mm-hmm.
A lot here to like, very little to dislike. The only problem is, I think this is a traditional station wagon that just happens to look like a crossover. For 2026, the Outback is going to be completely redesigned. I'm sure it's for the better. But it no longer looks like a station wagon.
Oh.
So, a little sad.
Is that a hang-up about station wagons being old? Or I don't get it, because I thought it worked for them for years.
It did, and it's worked. I'm surprised that they're abandoning this, because it's sort of the only non-luxury station wagon that sells in any volume.
Actually,
there are no others. There are no others. All the others are luxury. Mercedes-Benz, BMW, Audi, and Volvo still sell wagons.
You know, I find makes of vehicles, it's kind of like, I guess, music or food or whatever. There's a regional nature to it, because a dear friend drove a Subaru, and this was in Florida, and no one knew what it was.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh. And she had to take the vehicle to Atlanta. No, she had a Saab.
She had a Saab.
Saab, that's right.
That other S car.
Yes, it was a Saab. But somebody else had a Subaru also in Florida, and there was no place to take it for work to be done on it.
Oh, no.
So I'm thinking there probably is like a regional nature, like California cars are different than the cars that we like
in fact,
here in the Midwest.
I think it's only been within the past, I want to say, five-ish years that a Subaru dealership opened up
in
the panhandle.
Our part of Florida. Yeah, but there was never anything for a Saab, so she had to drive that thing to Atlanta to unload it, because they're like, what? Who wants that?
It's funny, because if you go to Denver, half the vehicles are Subarus.
Really?
Oh, that's super popular there. Yeah.
Okay, so a listener wants to know about the Volkswagen. When will that be available?
That's on sale now. The primary downside is that they're a little bit expensive. They start at 60. The one I'm driving is 72. The one I'm driving has everything on it. But if you're looking for something kind of fun and you can fit this into your budget, it's a pretty practical vehicle. Not a great road trip vehicle because of the limited range, but the perfect mom, dad, you know, soccer car for around town.
Let me stick with the electric vehicles, because you did a post on, I think it was on Facebook, where you were talking about the difference in the place you went to charge your electric vehicle.
Yeah, I recently, I had very bad luck. I'm just going to name the charging system with EVgo. And there were two chargers in Palatine. They're both not working. One of them has been abandoned, and the other one is just broken. So I had to make a little bit of a trip from Palatine up to Lake Zurich, which is a bit of a trip. It's 15 minutes. But there was an Electrify America station there. It's got eight total chargers. It's in a bank parking lot. It's very clean, very nice, very well lit. There isn't any place there to go use a restroom or pick up coffee or anything, but it's very fast. Now, this is one of their 150 kilowatt systems. There are 350s, but in both cases, I charged two vehicles in 2 weeks there. Really fast. They were charging at over 100 kilowatts, and just to make the point, that's just a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. So if you were driving this Volkswagen bus, which is a 95 kilowatt hour battery, and it was completely dead, it would take you less than an hour to charge it.
Hmm.
So if you're just going from like 20 to 80%, not very long. We're talking 20 minutes or so. So the system works. It is expensive. You do want to charge at home. It was 64 cents a kilowatt hour, which is like four times what we pay in Chicago for home power. So public charging should be avoided unless you need it, but it is working in some situations.
What about the Palatine stations? Were they vandalized? Were they just not, there's no upkeep or?
I think it's the latter two. I think no upkeep and a lack of interest. Particular unit, this makes me additionally angry because this unit is walking distance from my house. Huh. And I thought, I've got it made. But it never works. Its downtime is something like 80 or 90%. And even when it seems to be working, it doesn't work. So you waste time trying to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
Very frustrating.
Well, let me hold you on that for a second. What is the latest on the electric vehicle infrastructure throughout the country? Because a lot of people, as we did for years, driving 1,000 miles, Chicago to Florida, wherever, the interstates, you need to have a place to pull off and fill up your vehicle with whatever it is that is powering the vehicle.
So there's good news, bad news there. But it turns out that, I think it was at appeals court, but the federal money that was being held up by the current administration was released. Apparently, if they had been promised the money and the money was out there, it needs to go to the states that had applied for the money and had plans in place. So the good news is that a lot of this infrastructure is going to happen. Additionally, the Tesla system is increasingly available to other manufacturers' vehicles. And the Tesla system is large and it's robust and it's shockingly, you know, 95 to 100% uptime. So consumers have access to that now too. So that's good. And then a separate company, we may have talked about this. It's a not-for-profit called Iona.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of manufacturers, including Ford, General Motors, and a bunch of others, are building their own network to supplement these. So the charging is getting better. There are rural states where it's tough, but it's still not enough between Chicago and Milwaukee for some reason.
It's really hard to predict, too, a year from now where we're going to be. Is it going to continue to grow? Or are we just going to become stagnant?
Yeah,
and I'm hoping it continues to grow. And I'm super excited about this Electrify America outlet up there because this is twice in a row it's worked super well for me, and it was really easy.
By the way, the blatant plug light has started flashing, so if people want to check you out, where should they go? What should they do?
Oh, check us out at consumerguide.com. The new car reviews are there. The fun stuff that I do when I don't want to write about new cars is there as well. And you can stream the podcast if you want to, but it's more helpful if you guys just subscribe to the podcast, the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. This week we talked to a guy from Everati, a company that is taking classic cars and making them electric. A little controversial, but his stuff gets really good reviews. That's a good conversation.
Wow, that reminds me of the Robert Downey conversation we had a couple of years ago, where he was taking his old vintage cars and just pouring a bunch of money into them and turning them into electric vehicles.
There was a who did the TV? There
was a documentary.
A series of documentaries that was done, and I think he gave away some of those.
He
vehicles,
did,
didn't
yeah.
He?
Wow. They had a raffle to give them away after they did the document. In fact, remember they had a big tank. They turned the tank into an electric vehicle too, which was crazy.
You can also follow Tom on Blue Sky at Car Guy Tom on Blue Sky.
Thank you.
We should take a look at.
Well, a couple of texts before we move on to recalls, Tom. For those of us who are considering buying a used car online, and this comes from 940 area code, this is Dan texting. If we're considering buying a used car online from a great distance away from Chicago or any northern location where winter roads are salted, what can I do to ensure that I'm not getting a car that has started rusting? Is there anything I can do to permanently stop the rusting process once it's started?
No, but one of the interesting things, and people may not have noticed this, is that cars really don't rust anymore.
Right.
My daughter's car was not pampered, the 2014 Juke, and today in walking around it after having had it detailed, I found a little bit of rust over the front fender lip, wheel lip on the passenger side. And that's it. Cars don't rust that much, and I would not worry anymore about buying a car from the snow belt. It's just cars are so good when it comes to corrosion that it's not really an issue anymore.
Probably don't buy from an area that's had massive flooding.
Mm-hmm. No, because you
may end up... It's a different thing. A couple weeks ago, we talked about the historic flooding up in Milwaukee and the cars that were sitting in the casino parking lot for almost a whole week. And we said, wait a minute, if they were sitting there underwater, how many of those are going to end up on the used car market? And, you know, we've often talked about, I remember the first time we talked about this was after Katrina, which was 20 years ago this month. When you flip the trunk open, you take the carpeting and lift it and see what's going on underneath that piece of carpeting to see if there's any rust or if there's any dampness where it's been sitting in water.
And if it smells moldy.
Musty, moldy.
Danger, 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 Will Robinson.
Absolutely.
Another great trick, too, is to take your finger underneath the dash and find a flat surface and just rub your hand along it. And if you find anything like dirt, you know, grit, sand, something like that, that's something you should worry about.
Sure.
I had a couple experiences when I was looking for a used car.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the bolts that hold the seats down, same thing. Those could be rusted. Uh-huh. And the paneling on the doors, like above where the cup holder or the window, those can be warped. And those are telltale signs of flood damage.
Good point. Yeah. That's Julian on the other side of the glass.
Yes.
That reminded me, though, of the 73 Le Mans that my family had and I got to drive when I first started radio. And the doors would fill with water, with rain, literally would fill. So that when you would stop the car after a rain, you would slosh forward and slosh backwards. So if you're driving at a great distance, if you didn't need to go to the bathroom when you got in the car, by the time you stopped three times, you were looking for a bathroom. It was the craziest thing because there was a leak on both sides. It's like Diver Dan.
There's a hilarious Rusty Jones, if you guys remember Rusty Jones.
Sure.
The problem with Rusty Jones is that they may have been well-intentioned, but in spraying the interior of the doors with that black tar, they were closing the holes that were put there to let fluid out.
That's what happened to us. Yes, yes. Because when we take it back to the dealership, they go, well, it was dry. You know, these crazy people are coming and talking about sloshing.
And who was the, was it Z-Bart?
Z-Bart. Yes.
Are they still a thing?
And wasn't that a couple $100 on top of the purchase of your car?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you would always try to negotiate to get it for free. I don't think either of those companies is around anymore. But that would be like a thing a dealer would throw in. A little bit like Scotchgard.
Yes.
Yeah, we were always throwing in Scotchgard with a retail value of $600 at the dealership I worked at.
And was it Chrysler in the 70s? Were they one of the first to come up with this rust-proof guarantee?
That might have been the 770 warranty.
Yes.
And that might have been a Lee Iacocca thing. I remember that. Yeah.
And what wasn't it also, didn't AMC do something about rust-proofing in their final years? They said, you don't need to worry about rust-proofing because our cars are rust-proofed.
And that was a big worry back in the 60s and 70s. You just knew your car was going to rust out. My mother carpooled with a guy that the floor had rusted out of the back seat, and he had cardboard that he would change regularly. And she said, it got really cold in there, and I'm paying him to ride in a car with no floorboard.
Oh, man.
Tom,
I think AMC was going with galvanized body panels, right?
Yes.
Yes.
By the way, there is a wonderful series that hasn't shown up on PBS in Chicago, but it's about the last independent automaker, AMC, and some of the episodes are available on YouTube. It's wonderful. Really well-done series.
I watched the first episode. Joe Ligo, the producer of that series, was a guest on our podcast to promote that. And Joe was great, and his heart was in this thing. And I watched the first episode, and it was so good.
Yeah.
And it's really, even if you don't care about cars, the history is really nice. It's really cool. It's worth knowing about.
Tom, you got any recalls?
I do. And there's another massive Ford recall. A large Ford recall. Yeah, I don't even know how they... Wow, this is going to put such a dent in their bottom line. The Ford Edge, which is the compact crossover, that's been discontinued, by the way.
Right.
And the MKX, which is the mechanically similar but Lincoln version of that vehicle, half a million of those are being recalled for an issue... Oh, was it with the brake line? I had it written down right here. Yes, an issue with the brake line. I think it's to the rear brakes, but it's a problem because the brake line is failing and brake fluid is leaking out of the vehicle.
Oh, yeah.
But I have to ask what years, because we have a 2007 MKX in Florida.
You guys clear. It's 2015 through 2018.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Whew.
Yeah.
And even though you might have a leak, you have to wait until you get your letter of notification?
You do. Interesting thing about this, and this was mentioned specifically in the next Ford recall, they're doing what's called a phased notification. So we're probably going to see this if Ford has any more recalls, because there's been so gosh darn many of them.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to let people know in batches, and this will make it easier for repairs to be scheduled.
Sure. Wow.
Is there any Ford vehicle that hasn't been recalled within the past year?
Well, the Ford that was recalled 2 days ago was the Mustang. The 24 and 25 Mustangs produced from September of 22 through July of 25. This is the Mustang S650 generation. And 105,000 of them are being recalled. According to the documents that were filed with NHTSA, water in the body control modules could result in a loss of communication with exterior lighting components that include all of your side marker lamps, the license plate lamp, and the tail lamps. These lights may either stop working or flicker due to intermittent signals. So some pretty serious stuff.
Flickering lights used to be an English car thing.
Yeah, but we should mention again, and I know we half tease about Ford and the number of recalls they have. A recall is not a bad thing. A recall is a good thing. It's a warning that, okay, they found out this thing is going on, and they're going to fix it, and you ain't going to have to pay for it. That's the good part. The bad part is it'll probably take 9 years before it gets done.
Yeah, recalls are so interesting now because manufacturers no longer drag their feet on them. They've been embarrassed in the past by their reluctance to act on recalls, and the media is all over it now. So manufacturers just go ahead and they recall as soon as they can. They don't want people talking about the things or having it being suggested that they don't want to actually act on the repairs. So what we're seeing increasingly is just manufacturers do the recall right away. Like, they don't want to wait.
And also, as more and more cars become more and more computerized, a lot of these recalls can be done over the air, and many times you don't even have to take your vehicle into the dealership. You just pull it out where you have a good satellite signal, and they do the recall fix.
Well, the Hyundai recall can't be done over the air. Tom, do you have the Hyundai recall of 29 crossovers produced for the United States market?
I do not.
Yeah. Hyundai Motor America has identified a rather worrying issue that affects 29 crossovers produced for the United States market. In these vehicles, the connecting rod bolts may not have been properly tightened by the workers at the Hyundai Motor Manufacturing in Alabama. Low torque on the conrod bolts may lead to abnormal knocking, and this knocking may result in a sudden loss of motive power. A damaged connecting rod may puncture the engine block, causing oil to leak and ignite on contact with the exhaust manifold. We're talking some serious stuff here.
We are, and
Go ahead.
It's interesting that how many of these recalls are internal engine things, right? We had the Toyota one going way back. We've got the Chevy one now with the 6.2 liter engine. You just mentioned this one with Hyundai. And then it's not a recall yet, but Honda is being investigated or is investigating 1.4 million units. Built with Honda's excellent 3.5 liter V6, but the connecting rod bearing on those may fail. And I think there's 400 examples of that now. So this is probably going to turn into a recall too. And I'm really interested in why all of a sudden there are all these internal engine failures.
Well, and I'm curious about the Hyundai recall at the Alabama plant, because we passed this plant. Mm-hmm. This was a major investment for Hyundai, and it is largely computerized. So the while I don't know the specifics of this, but my supposition is this would not have been Joe didn't tighten it enough. This would have been the computer wasn't programmed to tighten it enough.
Well, especially if there are this many of them.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, 100 of them. We're talking thousands of them. It is primarily the Tucson and the Santa Fe vehicles. Affected Tucson crossovers were produced between February 2025 and August of 2025. So this year, and that's for the 25 and 26 model years, the Santa Fe is listed with production dates of between February of 25 and August 8th of 25 for the very same model years. Hyundai Motor America reprogrammed the logic controller for the visual and torque inspection process back on August 12th of 2025.
So it is a computer issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. What you said, Steve.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Every time you're with us, we have to spend a good 10 or 15 minutes talking about recalls. And we hear from people that say, gosh, I'm not worried about it. I know I'll get the letter, but it's nice to know that I might have this problem so I can be aware of it as long as the vehicle is still safe and it's drivable.
And again, if you want to check your vehicle for recalls, where should you go and what should you do, Tom?
Oh, go to NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration website. I think that is now just NHTSA.gov. But you can go there and you can enter your VIN, and it'll tell you if your car is affected by any active recall.
And if people want to actively recall some of the things we've been talking about or check out Consumer Guide, where should they go? What should they do?
Oh, just check us out at consumerguide.com. And relative to our story or our conversation earlier, I do have a test drive checklist, so I'm going to post that on the Consumer Guide Facebook page in a moment.
Oh, good. All right. And when you do, we will link to that.
Sounds good.
And if people want to follow you, Car Guy Tom at Blue Sky.
That's me. Yep. Enjoy the conversation.
Thank you, Tom. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
So we're going to get to some shouts, and let me start with some of the people that have been nice enough to check out our blog, and we would love it if you would do that. Our blog is located at steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. We would love it if you would check that out, and we would love it if you would subscribe. It's absolutely free. We do not spam you. You just get an email anytime that we have posted a new post on our blog.
We don't sell your information either.
No. And some of the countries, I'm continually amazed at this. For this past week, we have, of course, the United States, the United Kingdom, Canada, the Philippines, China, Sweden, Poland, India, Ireland, Germany, and Australia. Those are some of the countries that are checking out our blog.
That's wild. And again, as I tell you every week, if you go to sleep before the end of the show, you might miss when we talk about you. So it's quite possible that I'm going to give you a shout out now, and you're going to be dreaming this. And tomorrow, when you wake up, or later today, you're going to wonder if you actually heard me say your name.
Let me say a name of one of the people who posted on our blog post tonight. And that was Mark Orr, who was listening, as always, in Arlington Heights, who says, "You guys are the best." Well, thank you, Mark.
And posting on my page when we put up the rundown for tonight, Iowa's finest broadcaster, Pat Powers, said that he would be tuned in tonight.
And thank you, Pat.
Pat had his nerve. He came to Chicago and hung out and did fun things and never once called us. Mm-hmm. No.
He went to a Cubs game?
Yes. He went to Lou Malnati's. He went to all kinds of fun places, but all we got to do was see the pictures.
Did he wave at us?
No. Sherry and Bob are listening tonight. David Shine, a Sun Bulldog from 64, listening out in Mount Prospect. George Clemens is in Augusta, Georgia, tuned in. Bill in Hobart, Indiana. Miriam's in Seneca. Bing Besh is in Winfield, listening on his GE Clock Radio. We sound great on a clock radio, too.
We do.
Sandy Blackwell is listening in Peoria. Oh, let me get myself together here. Again, my excuses, my new eyes. I'm getting used to them. Mm-hmm.
You have a brand new pair of eyes.
Got a brand new pair of eyes. Bonnie is streaming from Butternut, Wisconsin. We had a bunch of people that responded to their first job, some fun stuff, too, because of it being Labor Day weekend. At the top of the show, we were talking about our first jobs and the weirdest jobs that we all held. And so I ramble as I'm looking for the other people that I want to mention, like Eric Baum, who every week he puts up a great picture from Wells Beach, Maine.
This picture is extraordinary. It's a
rainbow.
Like a sun rainbow.
And it goes from end to end. And he said, we are under a no-burn alert in Maine. Therefore, no campfires or fire pit burns until we get enough rainfall to make the woods safer. Lovely picture that Eric put up. So you can see that if you go to our Facebook page. Our buddy Bobby Danos is listening on his AM-FM clock radio. And he's a great friend of this show. And also, he introduced Debbie Tusick to the show. And she tunes in every week. And we really appreciate that, Debbie. Dubin Perkinson is listening. Let's see. What? It's pretty cool to catch your show on the app from my bedroom in Paris on a Sunday.
How cool is that?
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you, Dubin, for tuning in. Jan Reinhardt said, I'll be listening in the laboratory. Isn't it amazing what you can see after cataract surgery? I never knew who was on the other side of the church at Mass. I never knew that Steve had such great color in his complexion.
Yes, true.
And I literally am sitting across the table from him, and I said, wow, you look really healthy. And you said, it's the same way I looked before the surgery.
Yep.
You just didn't see it. And all the lights in our house are too bright now. Rich Wade is listening from Troy, Missouri. He's one of the Chase twins. Sandy McComas is in Michigan City, Indiana, listening on her AM radio. Nancy Hollins is tuned in Northbrook. Also, Jean Jacobson in Milwaukee, listening on her Sea Crane radio. Brian Lefevre's in Bridgeport, beautiful Chicago. Mark Schroeder is listening on his car radio in Neenah, Wisconsin. Susan Powell's in Memphis. Rita Reagy is in Denton, Texas. Susie Schimmel is in Glen Ellen. Lynn Kinzer is in San Antonio, Florida. Tracy Douglas is in Savannah. Robin Aiken is in Port Charlotte, Florida. Mary Gold is listening. Happy Labor Day holiday. Hubby and I will be tuning in with our old clock radio from Tinley Park. Thank you so much for tuning in, too. And Sharon Malone is in K-Town. Christine Failing is in Plainfield. Helen Thomas is in Kenosha. Chuck Snitchler, the best friend of this radio station and our show, is listening in Hobart, Indiana. Larry Mann's in Miami, Florida. Ellen Maria is in Marengo. Terry Brock is in Bridgeview while watching the Walkers from the North Coast Music Fest. Now, this town is hopping. Tonight, it was crazy with
all the activity
going on in the town. Gail Maslin is in Lake City, Michigan. Roger Camp is in Shade, Ohio.
Did you see the post from Ed Wales?
No.
Listening from the UP of Michigan, along with some neighboring moose.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a picture of these two...
Maybe a mama moose and a baby moose?
What do you call two mooses?
Mooses.
Meese?
No, I think it remains moose. I think.
But it's a great picture. Again, it's on our Facebook page.
It's a sweet picture.
It is. It's like the baby moose is cuddling up to the mama moose.
That head is huge on that creature.
It is.
Just imagine if you were to... I'm sorry, but, you know, if she were to leap out of the woods and your car would have smacked that, there'd be some serious damage. Fred Husar is listening in Lyons, Illinois. Ryan Corcoran's in Waukesha. Jeffrey Welshunts is in Elkins, West Virginia. Judy B. is in New Buffalo. And put up a picture of the New Buffalo Beach sign. Beach closes at 10 o'clock at night. Rose Marie Gleason is in Grove, Oklahoma at the Annie Oakley Ranch. We got to talk to her sometime. Luis Olivo is in Cicero. And if I missed you, I'm sorry. I will catch you next week. So you better be here next week.
Catch you on the flip for the shout-outs. We rarely get to say hi to Sylvia. So hi, Sylvia.
Hi.
Hello, Sylvia.
Hello, hello.
All right. I started out the show and I said, oh, we're just running out of time and I have such an important story to share with everyone. So I want to bring you in on this, Sylvia, because it's a question of wearing socks to bed. Do you have you seen the story?
I have not, so I'm so curious to hear
Okay,
this.
This is a story that I came across. It broke last night. Do you wear socks to bed?
Absolutely.
You do?
So I'm one of those people who's like perpetually cold.
Cold.
Yes. Mm.
Okay. Yeah, and the feet, when your feet are cold, it's just miserable, right?
Yeah. Yes.
I don't know how that feels because I'm always going, oh, is it hot in here or is it just me?
It must be nice.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's not. It's not.
Okay. But I'm going to ask because I know where you're going. So I'm going to ask a key question, Sylvia.
Yes.
When you go to bed.
Yes.
The socks you are wearing. Mm-hmm. Are they the same ones that you've worn all day or are they a different, I'm going to bed now, I want some cozy socks on?
It depends. It's usually a different pair.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Usually. But occasionally, if it's laundry day, they might.
Or if you've worked the night shift and you're exhausted and you go in and you just pass out.
Exactly.
And right. Julian is wondering, why the heck are they talking
Julian,
about wearing socks?
Do you wear socks to bed?
To bed? No.
No?
Oh.
Your little feet don't get so cold that you have to wear some cuddly socks.
Well, that's what the blanket's for.
Okay. Agreed with that. Steve, you've occasionally put on pairs. It's rare.
Well, only if I'm really, 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 really cold.
Okay. I can't wear. I have to have my feet out of
but
the
also,
cover. And
What does this mean for people who wear jammies that have like...
Well, you probably wouldn't be wearing those footy pajamas around all day. Sleep experts are now telling us that if you think falling asleep in your socks is harmless, buckle up. You're being warned that this habit is bringing bacteria into your bed.
What?
According to research, Sylvia, get this, socks worn all day can carry up to 20 times more bacteria than your toilet seat.
What?
Oh.
The poor toilet seat. It always gets picked on.
It does.
So that cozy, snug feeling could be all those germs that you've brought into your bed. And now, rest peacefully. I have visions of people are listening to us, and they're in bed, and they're going, oh, wait, I got my socks on. All right, since we're in the bedroom for just another minute, do you have a top sheet over you between you and your blanket or your duvet or your comforter?
Oh, yes. And
yeah.
Perpetually cold. So, yes, also with the top sheet.
Top sheet.
Yep.
All right, Julian, top sheet or no top sheet?
That's just too much work.
See? Okay. I am told this is something I learned shopping for sheets this week. I cannot believe the number of single bottom sheets that are for sale. Why? Because Gen X and Millennials do not like a top sheet. That's what I'm told. They like to sleep with their blanket or comforter on top of them. Well, all I can say is, back to the subject of bacteria, you better be washing that regularly.
Yeah.
Because that is just icky.
I would, just because of the nature of how it's constructed, I would think it would hold more crud than just a top sheet would.
Your body, you shed stuff off your body. That's what your top sheet is for.
Sylvia, you didn't think you'd have this conversation when you came in tonight, did you?
No, but you know, I'm so happy we are having it because when I get home, no matter how sleepy I am now, Johnny, I'm going to change my socks.
And you're going to be sure that you got that top sheet up around your neck and you don't have that bedspread.
Yeah.
I just, to me, that is the most uncomfortable thought in the world. Is, and you say, Julian, it's too much work to have the top sheet.
Well, now that you bring this up, I might take a note from Sylvia's playbook here. Yeah. I will do the same.
You're actually thinking, I'll never get a date unless I start using a top sheet, right?
Okay, so since we're talking about top sheets, where do comforters stand on this?
Well, no, that's the problem. People are now just sleeping on the fitted sheet with the comforter on top of them. And they say, well, you know, that's so much more comfortable. Again, think of what your body is going through when you just have that.
But see, I'm thinking of that comforter that you have that's thrown over the couch, that you're just taking a nap on the couch.
Or the Afghan. That's not a comforter.
It's a thing that goes over you.
Like a throw.
Makes you comfortable.
Suddenly that sounds icky, too. Yeah. I'm like, now we're going to burn them. We got all these Afghans at home. I'm going to, next time we have a campfire outside, we're burning them. Because that just sounds icky. But socks are 20 times more bacteria than your toilet seat, which I'm thinking, really?
That is something.
I feel sorry for the toilet seats.
I mean, but how? Like, your socks are protected all day. They're in your shoes. And if you're, like, your shoes,
I can't wear socks. I cannot wear them. Steve, you know this. I wear boots. I wear sneakers. Yep. I cannot wear socks. I feel like I'm smothering. I know that's crazy. I'm here to tell you. I know. Steve, go ahead. Say it. Say it. You are hurting. I'm just want to say because when I say that's crazy, he always goes, crazy,
Yeah.
I can't wear headphones on both ears because I feel like I'm smothering. I can only wear it on one ear, and I can't wear socks. Cute socks.
But sometimes she wears socks on her ears.
No, stop. Stop. This is informative. This is helpful. There are people that are now in bed thinking about the bacteria that's in bed
with
them. They
are changing their socks as we speak. I know it.
And they're going to take their comforter right down to the washing machine to wash it right away.
Yeah. How many people are listening to us in bed right now and starting to scratch?
Yeah.
Scratch at the thought. Oh, no.
Yeah. And, you know, we do have a lot of people listening from bed. Listener Deanna says, I always change into clean, no-show style socks each night. I've heard that wearing socks to bed... Let me click on this. I heard that wearing socks to bed helps you sleep better, and I have slept better since I started doing that. Good. That's a much healthier attitude because they're clean, they're fresh, they're your bed socks. It's different than plodding around all day in a pair of socks and then crawling into bed. Says the woman who, Steve, you know, to me, a good nap is a nap when I'm fully clothed.
That's true.
Again, very
in the middle
weird.
Of the afternoon with the sun coming through the window.
I want to be fully clothed. You know, that's kind of counterintuitive. I'm talking about socks. I'm taking my whole clothes into bed with me, which is really dumb, more I think about it.
And I'm sleeping with you?
Oh, man.
You have your picadillos, too. I said picadillos.
I always change my picadillos before I go to bed.
And you have no bacteria on your picadillos, do you?
Is that your picadillo or...
You're just glad to see me. We always lose control at 1:45 in the morning.
Yep.
It's like the wheels fall off. And Sylvia, it's a pleasure to work with you again.
Yes.
It's always a pleasure. It's always a thrill for me to be on overnights because I know I get to talk to you.
Well, enjoy your Labor Day and pack your white clothes. Those pants go in the closet.
This is it.
Yeah, this is it.
Man.
And I have to get out my fall blacks.
You have to transition
from your summer black to your fall black?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It'll be about Thanksgiving. We transition to the winter black.
Yes.
Let me tell you, I am not complaining because I do laundry. I love doing laundry. I love ironing. There's nothing easier than having black socks, black underwear, black t-shirt, black shirt, black jeans. I can just shove all of this into one washer. No problem.
Yeah, it's like that fail-safe cover. It's always stylish. It's always chic. It's always slimming.
Yep.
Oh, now you're pushing it. It's clothes.
Works for me. Okay.
Golly, we hear a listener says they're hearing the Zamboni.
I hear it. Yeah, I hear it. And the blue lights are flashing.
George says, have a great birthday week. Thank you, George. That's very sweet. I'm going to proclaim it as my whole week.
I think you should. That Zamboni means it is time for our last call. If you are our last caller, you have to have something pithy to say tonight.
Like, are you wearing socks to bed or not? Do you like a top sheet or not? These are the important questions. Do you like to nap fully clothed? Make me feel better. Not so weird now that I've confessed all of this.
Not so weird. Remember how we started the show?
Yes.
And we had major technical problems. We're ending the show with major technical problems.
All of a sudden.
Problems.
Yes. The wheels just kind of fell off.
Yep.
Of us.
Well, they fell off a long time ago.
Right.
But, I wish I had a picture of Julian literally slapping both sides of his computer screen. So it's not just
it's all dark over here.
It's all, yeah, it's...
I clicked a thing trying to repair the thing, and the thing just said, nope, you're fired.
Okay.
Ouch.
Well, and I think we might as well go home.
But first, let's just punch in a phone line.
Okay. I'm going to punch in a phone line, and this line says that Lisa is on the phone. Hi, Lisa. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from the south side of Chicago.
Well, I'm glad you made it in here, Lisa.
Whereabouts on the south side? I grew up on the south side at 80th and Manistee. Where are you from?
Okay, I'm on 99th and Union.
Okay, that's not all that far.
No.
Well, thank you for tuning in. I've got to ask you, are you wearing socks to bed tonight?
Well, that's why I stayed up and listened for the show, because I heard you mention it early.
Oh, did you really? And I said, keep listening to hear this.
I want to know what she says about socks. Yes, I sleep with socks.
Do you?
Yes.
Do you have a special going-to-bed socks, or are these the socks?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I have a drawer with going-to-bed socks.
Okay, so I won't worry.
I feel good.
Are they all different colors?
I have no idea. I'm blind. I just put them on. I mean, I'm a great guy.
God bless you. Who knows? They're socks. So, do you have a top sheet on your bed?
Yes, I do. But here's the crazy thing about it. When I put clean sheets on my bed, I don't want to mess them up. So I get a sleeping bag, and I get in the sleeping bag.
Girl, I love that. So you don't want to mess up your bed.
No.
Okay. I know what I said was weird about napping fully clothed. Just in case there's a fire in the afternoon, I'll be dressed when you hit the streets.
But honestly, Lisa, there is something about it's the middle of the afternoon. That afternoon sun is coming through the bedroom window, and Johnny just loves to flop down on the bed. Now, the interesting thing, she will be fully clothed, but she will pull some sort of a cover over her.
Mm-hmm, but I have to, I like to put my hands in my pockets.
You put your hands in your pockets while you sleep?
Yes, to get comfortable. I don't know, something happened to me when I was a baby. I know they dropped me or something.
Oh, dear. Yes.
So are you normally up this late?
Well, I've got crazy because I don't see anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on what I do during the day because my body doesn't know whether it's daytime or nighttime.
Oh.
So how do you deal with that?
I go outside. If I open up my front door and it's cool, then I know it's late because my front door faces east. So I go to the back and it's warm. So I said, okay, the sun is setting.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, you know, like last night, okay, this morning, this is a new day. Yesterday, I got up about, maybe 2:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I did some writing and some reading, and I fell back to sleep about 10. Then I got up again about 2:30 in the afternoon.
Oh, boy.
I have this crazy sleep cycle.
Sure. You know? But it's good, though, that you're just going with whatever your body's
saying.
Yeah,
just go with the flow.
I'm going to get up at 2:30 because there's nothing like, to me, there's nothing worse than just lying there. Just kind of, okay, I'm not sleeping. So just get up and do something. Like you said, writing or reading, do something.
Yeah. That's what I do. Otherwise, I worry myself to death. Like, why can't I go to sleep?
Yeah.
Why can't I go to sleep? Mm-hmm. I just say, okay, Lisa, you're awake. Get up. Mm-hmm. Do something.
Have you been sightless your whole life?
Not my whole life. I've been sightless for the past, since, when did this happen? In 94.
Mm-hmm. So what, 30 years?
Yeah.
Was it something sudden, or was it a gradual loss of vision?
It was, well, I'll tell you. I was beaten up.
Oh, dear Lisa.
I lost my right eye immediately.
Oh, no.
And then my left eye, the doctor said, well, the retina was detached. Either it'll come all the way off, or when the swelling goes down, you know, it'll fall back down. So I tell people, I said, I guess God wanted me to see things differently because the retina came all the way off.
Golly.
You know, I've been, you know, living, and it's different. You know, I make jokes about it.
Mm-hmm.
I was in class the other day, and the teacher said, tell us something about you that nobody could tell by looking at you. And I said, could it be that I'm blind?
No.
You know, so everybody back in the class said, I said, no, I like to joke about it. I'm cool.
Yeah. Wow. What are you taking in school?
Clinical mental health counseling.
Oh. Whoa. Well, you certainly have a soothing voice. I mean,
you should be in radio. You have a radio voice.
You know, I used to have a radio show on WCSU. It's called Blind Impact.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I would do it again, but my studies are so, you know, intense.
Intense, yeah, yeah.
That, I just like listening to the radio. I enjoy you guys' show. I catch you every time I'm up around this time. My radio, I just turn it down. Mm-hmm. You know, during the day, and then at nighttime, I turn it back up when you guys come on.
Oh, thank you. It's so nice to meet you, too, Lisa.
Really.
And we're going to send you out a WGN T-shirt, and we're also going to send you out a copy of our Life After Dark CD.
Still have a CD player?
Yes.
Well, good.
I do have a CD player on my computer.
Okay, great.
And I want to get that comic book. What is it?
Big Shoulders.
Big Shoulders.
Yeah, it's terrific.
Now, it's crazy. I don't see anything, but I collect comic books. I collect books. I have a library, you know, in my house. Because when I could see, I used to read all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
I still have it, so I want to get the book.
Well, again, you've got a great attitude, and it's really wonderful to meet you and to talk to you.
And I hope you will call again.
Yeah.
I will. I didn't expect to get an answer. I said, you didn't hear me. I said, when you said Lisa, I said...
Well, literally everything went dark in here. So
this is so weird. Things went dark.
Yeah, and then we chose Lisa out of a bank of phone calls.
Wow.
Yeah. That's the universe, right?
Yeah.
Well, you take care of yourself, Lisa, and stay in touch. It's so nice to talk to you. Bye bye now.
Hold on for a second, and Julian will get some information from you off the air. She has a great voice.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm like, keep talking, girl. I'll just be over here. Well, it's been really fun. Thank you guys for tuning in. And I'm looking at all the messages that I missed tonight. Not only did we have a listener listening to us in Paris, but we had a listener that was tuned in from Ireland.
Wow.
And then another listener was packing to go to Ireland later today.
How cool.
And was going to take us along with him. So thank you.
Well, again, this has been a very fast 5 hours. And the podcast will be up over the next week or so.
And follow us on Facebook, on our Facebook show page. Or if you're not comfortable with Facebook, go to our blog. And you can follow us there. We put pictures up. We put recipes up. We put really all the stuff
A lot of stuff on our blog that we don't put on.
A lot of stuff that doesn't make it to Facebook, yes.
And our blog is steveandjohnny.wordpress.com. We'd love it if you would subscribe. There's no charge. We don't spam you. We just send you an email whenever we do a new post.
Yep.
Quick reminder, next week we start a little later.
Yes, we're going to start a little later. And we're going to talk to one of the guys that has written a great book about the history of the Uptown Theater. So our thanks tonight to Engineer Bob and to Dan, who was here earlier tonight and helped us out at the beginning of the show, and also to Ron and Sylvia and, of course, Julian.
And, of course, to you for hanging out with us. We will talk to you next week. Stay safe.